from the cosmic reaches of the internet. Here in the basement of the Great Hall of Justice are the most powerful forces for good podcasting ever assembled. This is the DC Superpowers Podcast.
This looks like a job for Superman.
To the Batmobile.
My name is John Jones.
I am the Green Arrow.
Hey, DC Superpowers fans, welcome back to the DC Superpowers Podcast, issue 24 for September 17th, 2016. Now, if you've been listening to our show, you know the December or September 17th we've been looking forward to for a couple of months. But before we get into that, I'm your host, Ken Rose, and sitting along with me, my co-host and partner, Vern.
Hello, everybody.
So, Vern, why would September 17th be a special day?
Oh, no, just one of the greatest superhero celebrations ever.
One of the greatest superhero celebrations ever, huh? Well, what is it?
Yep. It is Batman Day.
Exactly. We've been talking about this for a month or two now, that Batman Day was coming. Well, guess what? It's here. And we're actually recording on Saturday morning of Batman Day. We usually, like we said, we've been recording on Thursdays, but since Batman Day was right here and we're going to release it on Batman Day anyway, we thought we would have a special Batman Day show on the day. So, Vern, do you remember first seeing Batman when you were a kid?
Oh, man, first seeing him? He's been around in my life for so long since I was a kid, I can't remember. I'm trying to think the first time I seen him. I want to say it was either the Michael Keaton movies that my mom would watch or the Batman animated series from, Fox Kids, I think it was on Saturday mornings, so I was skimming through the channels. So one of those.
Oh, yeah. Well, mine had to have been, it was either Scooby-Doo's Mysteries when they had Batman and Robin on there.
Oh, that was a good one.
Which I don't think that was it, though. I think actually mine was probably from Super Friends. But then again, I grew up a totally different generation where I had superheroes. We had it Saturday morning and that was it.
I was going to say Super Friends might have been another one also from when my mom recorded on VHS. She would replay the old Super Friend cartoons.
That could
be another one.
Now we have some, we actually, instead of our normal news segments that we usually do for this show, we actually pulled just Batman news for this week. But, there was a couple other things I wanted to just talk about, because we're going to keep this more conversational than a news show until we get to our comic reviews like normal. But the one TV news, remember Monday, the 18th or 19th, right?
Yes.
Is that
19th.
Monday? Yes. That's the premiere date for Gotham. So check it out on Fox. Our first show for this season is coming out this week.
And Go
ahead.
So you think Fox planned it that way?
That's possible. I don't think so, because they would have planned this so far out ahead that we wouldn't have
They would probably be celebrating a little bit more, too. But just what a coincidence.
Yeah. Now, DC may have planned it this way.
Oh, okay.
They may have seen when Gotham was premiering and then decided to put it on this day. Because the premiere dates for TV is usually far enough out that may have flipped the other way, but as we're getting into a little bit of Batman stuff. Oh no, wait a minute! I got to do some more. We got to finish the rest of our open stuff. Remember Super Friends? Well, no, I'll hit it at the end.
Okay,
I'll just hit that stuff at the end.
That,
we'll just get into Batman.
So straight into Batman. It's Batman Day. Let's go on and celebrate.
That's right. So, what's one of your favorite storylines from the Batman comics?
One of my favorites, Year One. I know my think top all favorite is Hush, but Batman Year One was one of my favorite ones I ever read from I want to say probably the top five of my list.
Okay. Well, what happens in Batman Year One?
It's basically just the origins of Batman. This is where Christopher Nolan got his idea from for the Dark Knight trilogy, or at least the Batman Begins part of it. It's just showing Batman coming back to Gotham and seeing us in terror from just the criminals. As some people say, the city stinks and reeks of just filth, and not just real filth. It's just all the bad guys in the in the city, and Commissioner Gordon actually just now becomes commissioner by the end of it. Commissioner Lowe was still the guy running everything. He was a dirty, dirty cop, so he had his hands in all the crime, so he wasn't helping. So they needed Gordon and Batman to step up to the plate. And I like the fact that it took a regular man and a superhero to do so, to show that heroes don't always have to wear costumes.
Okay. That was actually Frank Miller, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
That's what I thought. If I remember, that's one of the ones that's on sale digitally right now.
Okay, and that was one of the less grittier Frank Miller comics, I want to say. It was gritty, but it wasn't really the violent type of gritty that we're used to seeing from Frank Miller. This was just a really good story-wise. And like I said, this was also the origins. And I think now this is what some people would consider the main origin for him because of Frank Miller.
Yeah. Well, for me, you're a lot bigger Batman fan than I am in books. We've already talked about that. But I think one of mine's got to be Nightfall.
I figured you were going to say that.
Yeah. I just finished the volume one of Nightfall. It took me like 6 months to get through because it's 600 pages and there's three volumes in this size.
Yeah, that's a long book. I think I stopped after volume one and two and I read that at Barnes & Noble. So that was a long reading to sit there.
Well, it was, anybody who doesn't know, back in the, we're actually going to talk about this a little bit on another story that we have here. But back in the early 90s, and I believe this was done before they did The Death of Superman.
Yeah, and I was going to say also, Bane was created my birthday year, 1993.
Nice. Well, that's when this was the introduction of... Now, at this point, everybody knows Bane. But this was the introduction of Bane into comic books, and it was the story where Bane comes out and breaks Batman's back. And now this... Other incarnations I've seen of Bane in the TV series, it wasn't as bad, but like in the movie, which one was it? He was in Batman Forever or Batman and Robin. Yeah, he was in Batman and Robin, where he was just a big oaf. It's like read the original version of Bane, he was a genius almost. He had found out or he had figured out how to destroy the Bat, and he put this plan in place, slowly working his way through the underworld, taking over everything until finally he was able to break Batman and take over the city. Now at this point, or since Bruce Wayne's back is broken, he has to. There still has to be a Batman. So he brings in Jean-Paul Valley. Now this actually leads into another story we have here. Anyway, let me bring that one up. Of four people who have actually been Batman other than Bruce Wayne. Now this one here,
I'm surprised by.
Yeah. Well, this one here most people know of because Jean-Paul Valley was actually Azrael. We've talked about him when we were talking about Gotham. He was actually the spirit of vengeance for a secret order of Saint Dumas. And he was brainwashed from being a child into be a sleeper agent for them and an assassin. But now on DC Comics' website, they actually had send in the replacements for others who have worn the cowl. And the way they described this when Jean-Paul Valley was, it says, during the late 80s, Bruce Wayne found himself the unfortunate victim of a broken spine at the hands of Bane as part of the legendary Nightfall. While Bruce was recovering from his injury, he made the risky decision to entrust the cowl to a relative newcomer to Gotham, the semi-reformed zealot named Jean-Paul Valley, or more popularly as Azrael. Azrael was first introduced back in 92 in Batman's Sword of Azrael, which I actually have on my shelf behind me, where he was predominantly painted as an anti-hero at best and a brainwashed villain at worst. Eventually, Batman and Jean-Paul were able to reverse the conditioning instilled in him by the secret cult, the Order of Saint Dumas. Then Jean-Paul was born into and set down the path working as a security guard for Wayne Tech. Eventually, he even began to apprentice with Batman and Robin to hone his detective skills. Now, of course, this plan lasted about as long as Bruce did, because when Bane took the original Batman off the table, it was left to Azrael to pick up the cape and cowl, which to just about everyone's dismay. This plan went about as well as you could hope, with Jean-Paul Valley's tenuous grip on his mind slipping away almost immediately. With some new hyper-violent modifications to the Batsuit, Jean-Paul promptly began a reign of terror in Gotham that even went as far as to leave Tim Drake kicked out of the Batcave. Eventually, the reign of terror spiraled so far out of control that Bruce had to return from his healing retreat and kick him out. So, but I remember the big one on this one was the different Batsuits that Azrael made. Every time he couldn't figure out something, he'd make another modification to make it even more violent.
Yeah, in that sense, he was a little bit more technical than Batman when it came to that. Batman didn't need his suit to make him the superhero.
And we'll get to that in a minute, too, about different suits. But the next one they have on the list flows right out of that, was, just like you would expect, Dick Grayson has actually taken the cowl multiple times.
And he's one of the best Batman, too. And my Bruce will always be number one, but I think I like Dick Grayson being Batman more than I did Azrael.
Yeah. Well, Dick Grayson, out of all the Robins, Dick Grayson, I think, obviously knew Bruce best, but also was probably the closest in fighting style in the way he does detective work and stuff to Batman. Because Tim Drake was totally his own character.
Yeah, Tim was his own character, even though he took up the mantle of Robin, and he even became Red Robin. He wanted to keep that name, but I think Bruce trusted him the most because he knew there was nothing he had to worry about with Tim. Tim was just a good-hearted soul.
Exactly. And they even said in Detective a couple of issues ago how when Bruce was talking to Tim and told him straight up, you were the only Robin who chose to be Robin.
Right. I think he was his best student.
Yeah. So, he may be one of the best detectives out of him. Because if you look even now with Dick, he has the detective skills, but he doesn't always fall on that at first.
It's funny because out of all the Robins he has had in the past, Dick Grayson is a good detective. He even became, well, you know, like took off the mask and became Agent. I keep forgetting.
13.
Agent 13. So that was also the detective part right there. But Tim, whenever he's doing something to find out or figure out where he has to spy on or get some information, it reminds me of a young Batman when he does so.
Yeah. So, but Dick Grayson, the first time he ever actually became Batman, which is amusing since he had been around at this point, almost as long as Batman. It was only a couple of months after Batman was created that they created Robin. So Dick Grayson's been around since the early 40s, but the first time he ever became Batman was in the mid-90s. It says,
that took some time.
Yeah. Well, what it is when Bruce came out and kicked out Jean-Paul, but he wasn't actually physically fully healed. He wasn't ready to actually become Batman again. So he calls in Dick, and Dick Grayson takes up the mantle of Batman in a story arc card called Prodigal, which went through all the different Batman titles through 94 and 95. But this one was Dick knew from the beginning he did not want to stay Batman. He was doing this because Bruce couldn't do it. It says here, Prodigal puts Dick's concerns over walking too closely in Bruce's shadows, as well as his anxiety about not living up to the legacy of the Bat, at the very forefront of the narrative, making it easy to be easily one of the most formative stories for which would later branch into Dick's solo adventures from the Nightwing ongoing series, which I loved that series back in the 90s. And that began publication in 96. Now, it says, Prodigal was not the last time Dick would find himself in the shoes of his mentor. Nearly a decade later, after the events of Final Crisis and Batman and R.I.P., Dick found himself in the middle of an all-out war across Gotham for the right to be Batman in Bruce's path. In Battle for the Cowl, all manner of heroes and villains crawled out of the woodwork for their chance to have a piece of the pie, or the cape, as it were, with Dick eventually ultimately emerging victorious. Now, eventually, Bruce returns from his absence, and unlike with Prodigal, rather than completely reclaiming his old identity, he and Dick decide to split their Batman duties, with Bruce acting as Batman for the Justice League and Dick as Batman for within Gotham City limits. That arrangement actually maintained that way through several months. Through several months until the events of Flashpoint landed them both back in their original roles. So that lasted for a while then.
Yeah, it was Batman, not Batman. Well, he was Batman, I'm sorry. Dick Grayson's Batman and Damian Wayne's Robin teamed up for a while. They were a pretty good team. I think Damian fit with Dick Grayson better than he did his own father when they would team up.
Well, I can see that because if you watch Batman right now, and they had... it was in Nightwing. Remember when Nightwing comes back off from his first...
Oh, yeah.
From his first mission, you get the time in the cave with Dick and Damian,
and their little combo they had.
It feels like a big brother situation. Big brother, little brother.
I always felt like they had a better connection because it was like, this is my dad, but I don't really like working with my dad, but he's my father. When he was with Dick, they actually had fun on missions. Him working with Dick Grayson actually brought out the light side of Damian Wayne. And to me, the only time we'll ever see the best side of Damian Wayne is from Dick Grayson, because when he's with the Teen Titans, he's a little butthole. When he's with his father, he's just that son that's being rebellious. So with Dick, they just would have good chemistry with each other.
Well, the couple things I've read and seen a little bit with Damian Wayne with Batman, the way I always looked at it is when he was raised before Batman, with Talia and Ra's al Ghul, it feels like he was always trying to earn their approval, doing whatever he can to show that I'm as good as everybody else. And that seems to carry over when he's working with Batman. The whole time, Batman, as far as I know, has never not given him approval or whatever. You know what I mean? But he's always looking for that attaboy. He's looking for someone to tell him, hey, you're doing a good job. So he tries really, really super hard. Whereas it seems like when he's taught with Dick, he's more like your big brother, so you're more friends and you're just relaxed.
Right, and he doesn't always try to push himself with Dick. It's like he doesn't have to force anything. It just comes natural, and that's the true hero of Robin.
Exactly.
When it comes to Damian. So, yeah, if we ever get another team up in the near future with them, but I don't know if we will because of Superboy and the Robin title is coming up. But
well, we'll see. Go ahead.
It would be nice to see them at Teen Titans together if we can get a little cameo. Because I know, isn't he coming in the new team of Teen Titans sometime soon?
I believe so, yeah. Titans actually, let me pull up the book. I have the list for September right here. Titans Rebirth is actually the end of this month on the 28th.
Good, sweet. Okay.
That's Teen Titans Rebirth. We've already had regular Titans Rebirth.
Okay.
So.
Okay, so they're sticking with that. This is interesting.
So, but no, I kind of hope with the Nightwing titles, they have Damian popping. I love the way they have him popping in and out once in a while talking with Dick when Dick's in town.
Oh, yeah. That, like I said, the conversation just feels so much more natural.
Yeah. And I forget who it is that's writing. Isn't it Tim Seeley that's doing Nightwing?
Let me confirm that for you.
I believe so. But the way he writes these two characters.
Yeah, it's him, Tim Seeley.
He must have brothers or something because it feels like he knows what he's talking about when it comes to a family relation between brothers, especially the one. And it's not like just regular brothers because they're not
blood.
They're not blood. But what I'm saying is, it's not like brothers where they're a couple years apart, so they're always competing. This feels like an older sibling relationship where you have like your big brother's like 21, 22, and you're 10 or 12, which is about what this is. Maybe a little bit different, but so you weren't around when he was growing up, and then he was brought in, and so he's just that extra big brother's. I keep saying big brother, same thing I keep saying over and over again, but it just feels perfect.
And because he's walked in the same shoes as he has, so he knows where he's coming from, he can relate to him a lot better. He remembers being that child that Batman always had to watch over shoulder, always wanted approval from. And as he said in the last night, we'll get to that, but as he said in a recent comic book, Bruce, I'm not like you. And as you saw from the arc we're reading, he said the same thing. I cannot be you, Bruce.
Yeah.
He just has a different outtake on how he views people. He trusts people more in Bruce, too.
Well, that's something we that goes back to when Dick Grayson was Nightwing and just but when he was Batman and things that and the difference between Dick and Tim, they were both phenomenal Robins, but Dick Grayson for years has done everything he can to not be Batman, to not be Bruce Wayne.
Right.
He almost tries overly hard to prove that he is a different person. He's almost searching for his own identity for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Tim, coming in fresh, he was not raised by Bruce, and he chose to be Robin. He already had his own identity established. He knew who he was and what he wanted to be when he picked up the mask.
Right.
He wasn't trained into the mask, as it were.
Right, unlike Dick Grayson and Jason Todd.
Mm-hmm.
And
Jason, actually, we really didn't have... How long was Jason Robin before Joker got him? Maybe a year or so?
Maybe 2 years, because he was, like I said, he even did some crossover with Teen Titans, although that can happen in a year's time. Yeah. I really don't know how long.
I know it was a short run that he was actually there, but but that's another
fans
one.
Didn't respond to him too well. Yeah.
Even back then and even now, he's a totally different person because another, just similar to Tim, he didn't have being raised by Bruce, so he didn't have to worry about, well, am I going to be exactly the same?
Well, technically, he was raised by Bruce, but he just had a different outlook on how he viewed being a Robin.
Yeah.
Well, he was didn't also care.
Yeah, he came. You got to think he came from the streets. He was not a vigilante, but he was a crook and stuff to start with. He was stealing the first time Batman meets him. He's stealing the tires off the Batmobile. So that gave you a totally different. That gave you a totally different view of it. Let's go through these last two that are on here. Then I want to actually go to Robin for a minute. Because we've talked about four of the Robins. I want to talk about the fifth one because I don't know as much about it, but I think you may know more.
Okay.
But
which, I wonder which one.
Fifth we'll see in a minute.
Okay.
But the third person they have on this list, now there's been multiple other people that have held the cowl, but Harvey Dent was actually Batman for a minute.
And it that says, one I forgot all about.
Well, the article here reads that perhaps one of the most unusual Caped Crusaders to start stalking the streets of Gotham was Harvey Dent, who took up his very own duotoned interpretation of the Batsuit during Battle for the Cowl as one of the many contenders for the throne. As you might expect, he was ultimately unsuccessful in this attempted coup. But here's the interesting thing. Harvey's desire to become Batman may not be as far from center as you think, as you initially think. Jump back to 2006, and you'll find 1 year later, a publishing event that followed Infinite Crisis, where some of the DC Universe's most prominent heroes decided to take a year-long sabbatical, leaving the safety of the world entrusted to some very unusual second stringers. For Gotham, one of those heroes just so happened to be Harvey Dent, who was handpicked by Bruce himself to fill in the gaps he, Robin, and Nightwing were going to leave. So Bruce actually had Harvey Dent take over. Now before you immediately think picking Harvey as a hero is basically asking for an Azrael 2.0, there are some things you'll need to understand. Following some corrective surgery to mend the scarring on his face, Harvey had actually shown a remarkable improvement in the way of his psychosis. He was, for all intents and purposes, the DA that Bruce had once worked so tirelessly with.
I had a question about that,
okay,
too. Now, is this, what year was all this, or when did this take place? Because
it
was after?
It says right around 2006.
Okay, you said it's after he had a reconstructive surgery on
yes.
his face, right? So this had to be after the Hush run, because that's when he did get his face fixed, was by Tommy Elliott.
Okay.
Okay, and that when we seen that after his face got better, is like his mental state got better as well.
Yeah.
So I can see why Batman wanted him to be another Batman, at least give him a chance.
Mm-hmm. Well, it says here, so okay. With his Two-Face identity no longer a real threat, Bruce saw to it that Harvey was trained in martial arts and detective work before he flew the coup. Harvey's time as protector of Gotham City happened largely, quote-unquote, off-panel, in the time skip to Bruce's return. During that time, he never actually donned the cowl himself, but the groundwork had been laid. Harvey's eventual return to his Two-Face identity would come not long after the events of 1 year later, and then in Battle for the Cowl, we would see the seeds of Harvey Dent Batman really bloom. Who would have guessed that training a reformed supervillain would have some serious consequences down the road? So, that just would have been interesting, seeing Harvey Dent as Batman. I may have to go back and get a couple of these trades.
I'm going to have to get that one, because I forgot all about that even happened.
And you know what? You know, it's weird. They bring up Battle for the Cowl when all these other... I have the Battle for the Cowl trade, and I don't remember reading. I'm going to have to pull it back out and read it again.
I know also in that one, it's not on the list, but Jason Todd, I would say, would be an honorable mention before we get to the last guy on this list. Yeah, Jason took up that mantle too, and he was worse than Harvey would be with the guns, at least.
Oh, yeah. Well, Jason is a more violent hero. Or anti-hero,
yeah.
Or whatever you want to call him. Why do you think Red Hood is working? They have that Red Hood in the Outlaws now.
Yeah, he's. So. I mean, that was just really different to even see a Batman like that. If I saw a Batman coming down the streets with guns like that, I'm like, what happened to you just breaking my bones? I think I like that a little better.
Yeah. Well, the last one they have on their list here was actually Hugo Strange. It says one of Batman's very first supervillains, the nefarious and psychotic Hugo Strange, has actually been obsessed with maintaining his self-appointed title as the world's greatest psychologist. This obsession predictably has led him to zero in on the mysterious nature of the Batman more than once, even going as far as to deduce the identity of Batman's secret identity as Bruce Wayne. In the pages of Batman Gotham Knights number 8 through 11, Hugo manages to infiltrate Wayne Enterprises as a corporate psychiatrist, and then use this position to corner Bruce about his secret. To escape this trap, Bruce actually manages to trigger a set of post-hypnotic fail-safes within his own brain, causing him to completely disassociate the Batman side of his mind entirely. This kicks off an unfortunate chain reaction with Hugo, who doesn't seem to be able or seem able to conceptualize the idea that his assumptions about Batman's identity were incorrect. So he does the only logical thing he can in this position and decides to become the Dark Knight himself. After all, if Bruce Wayne isn't Batman, then who is there to stop him? The answer to this one is, of course, Nightwing and Robin, who are there to handle not only a wildly confused and disassociated Batman, or Bruce, but the mad Hugo Strange, who is violently insisting that he, of course, is Batman now. And with his superior intellect and an absolute mystery of the mind in relation to the body, he very well could be. That is, if he weren't completely insane. Now, at the end of this, Robin and Nightwing are able to decode the trigger words and mental landmines Bruce programmed into himself and reawaken his memories, which sends Hugo unable to accept his own failure, completely over the edge in the process. Wasn't he already there?
Oh, yeah, he was there.
Now, his sloppy berserker rage makes him easy to take down and cart away to Arkham, where he begs his doctors to take the cowl away from him, frantically chanting, "I am Batman, I killed Batman." So, but that one's weird. The whole thing with Bruce Wayne putting the psychological things in his brain about to switch back and forth or to be able to disassociate Batman, that's just a little weird for me.
Well, it was just showing how crazy Hugo Strange also was, because he was the psychologist, the doctor that helped these mental patients, but he was crazier than all of them when it came to Batman. He came up there to meet with Joker.
Okay.
Probably the only other character I think that was Batman's villain that actually went psycho with the whole, I'm obsessed with Batman. He thought he was Batman. So, and in some stories, Joker in his mind would like to be a different version of Batman, but Hugo was actually the one to go over that line. So I thought that gave the character a little bit more standalone room if they ever wanted to go off of that.
Yeah.
I would like to see a mini issue of a mini run of Hugo Strange being Batman, seeing what he can do for the city.
That'd be weird. But actually, the two that didn't make the list that I know about that have been Batman is... I know Superman has been Batman multiple times, just to help cover the identity and things like that. He's never actually acted as Batman, that I know of. But and then we have the newest version was Commissioner Gordon was Batman for a little while.
Oh yeah, that's right. That was the latest one. I forgot all about that. I said, I think it was before New 52 came to a halt. I didn't know too much about what was going on with that.
Okay. Well, I just brought up a wiki on alternate versions of Batman. And, of course, we know Bruce Wayne has been Batman. Because he's Batman for over 75 years now, or close to 77, I think it is. But then the second one on the list, they have Azrael. We've already covered that. We have Dick Grayson, who's actually, we've went over. Jason Todd, you mentioned. I didn't realize Tim Drake has actually been Batman, possibly.
Yep. Yeah, when they were going through the whole little war, he became Batman, too.
Okay. Well, Damian Wayne has taken on the costume.
And that's from the future, right?
Yeah, it says Damian has also been shown as a Batman in a possible future in Batman 666, mm-hmm. number 666.
Yep.
He was shown mentoring Bruce and Dick as previous holders of the title. Oh, mentioning Bruce and Dick as previous holders. And has a pet cat affectionately called Alfred. And then, of course, one that was obvious that we should have known anyway was Terry McGinnis as Batman Beyond.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's where Tim Drake's been Batman. Remember, he was Batman in the current run of Batman Beyond also.
Oh,
right
yeah,
now.
That's right.
He Battle for the Cowl,
right.
JLA number 8 and 9, he was Batman. And most of it was possible future versions of Batman on most of this.
Mm.
So, but yeah. And actually, Batman Beyond finishes this. This is the last issue of it that just came out. That would have been this week's review for this month. So then they have alternate versions, variations on Batman and stuff. But that's the ones they have listed here as the people who have actually been Batman in the actual continuity. But the other one I wanted to talk about a little bit was Robbins. Now I'm not going to worry about who was the one for Batman Return of the Dark Knight or Dark Knight Returns.
Okay.
Do you know who that one was? I don't remember her name off the top of my head.
off the top of my head, I do not remember. I remember Stephanie Brown, but that wasn't the one from Dark Knight.
Well, that's the one I want to go to is Stephanie Brown, because I wasn't reading when she was Robin. I heard about her becoming Robin.
I didn't read also. So we're both a little new when it comes to that, I guess. I knew she was.
Well, let me look it up here.
First female in the main Batman universe to become Robin, but besides that, I don't know too much about her past.
It's a very short. I went back to Wiki, and it says Stephanie Brown, Tim Drake's girlfriend, which still has a is at this point, and the costume previously, or she was previously Spoiler, which she is back to that now. Volunteered for the role of Robin upon Tim's resignation. Batman fired the Girl Wonder for not obeying his orders to the letter on two separate occasions. So she was fired twice. Stephanie then stole one of Batman's incomplete plans to control Gotham's crime and executed it. Trying to prove her worthiness, Brown inadvertently set off a gang war on the streets of Gotham. While trying to help end the war, Brown was captured and tortured by the lunatic crime boss Black Mask. She managed to escape, but apparently died shortly afterwards due to the severity of her injuries. Tim Drake keeps a memorial for her in his cave hideout underneath the Titans Tower in San Francisco. Now, she appeared alive and stalking Tim after his return from traveling around the globe with his mentor. It turned out that Dr. Leslie Tompkins had faked Stephanie's death in an effort to protect her. Then for years, she operated on and off as Spoiler, but then was recruited by Barbara to be the replacement at Batgirl. Then she had her own series, as well as making appearances throughout various Batman and Batman spinoff series. And her time as Spoiler, Robin, and Batgirl was retconned to have never happened after Flashpoint, with her reintroduced as Spoiler again in Batman Eternal. And then at this point, we know in Detective Comics, she's still Spoiler, and she's Tim Drake's girlfriend.
And went back to the 90s. And that's something I'm really seeing between her and Tim. This does not feel like the Tim I've seen in the early 2000s at all. This is the 90s Tim still.
Yeah. So that's Stephanie Brown, Damian Wayne. Yeah, that's we just have those Robins, according to Wiki. We have the five Robins there. And we've already talked about the other ones.
Right.
There, Carrie Kelly's the other one. That was from Batman: The Dark Knight Returns, and I don't know much about her. I read Dark Knight Returns once, and I wasn't a huge fan of Dark Knight Returns myself. But I think that covers basically the people in the suit in the two different main suits. We actually had some Batman movie news though this past week.
Which ones?
Let's go with the picture. This past week, we actually got a picture from the set of Suicide Squad, or not Suicide Justice League. Sorry. And this one, I don't know.
That's the next one.
Yeah. The suit itself, I don't have a major problem with. For me, it's the Batman now has a new tactical bat suit. Now, if I remember in the comic books, mostly in the main continuity, Batman has his bat suit and that's it. He doesn't have to have special suits for special occasions all the time. Now, I could be wrong here.
Right.
In the Elseworlds titles and stuff, they change it, but.
Yeah, I mean, he would have his different suits, but not the way we see it in media, where it's like, oh, he's got a suit for this, he's got a suit for that, he's got a suit for this. He does, but it doesn't happen that often. It's one of those things, oh, Batman had to pull out a suit. This must mean he really needs to armor up or take down this bad guy. It's really serious, so.
Yeah.
For media, we see it happen like every other movie or every other cartoon.
That's, especially with the cartoons and the movies and stuff, for me, it's a grab for toys.
Yeah, I was going to say they're doing it for toy sales.
The more different looks they can give to Batman, the more different Batman action figures they can make.
Right, right.
Like,
which is, I don't mind seeing the sculpt, but you, don't do this just so they can get toys.
Yeah.
Make it just go with a good flow with the story.
I mean, the new suit doesn't look bad. It's a little strange, but it's basically, and actually a lot of people, I guess, were seeing Night Owl from Watchmen in this suit.
Oh, I see a lot. I see Night Owl a lot in here. But it's not Night Owl. This is just the image actually they're showing on here also. This was taken from a comic book, too.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, the thing is, we're not going to see him walk around this technical suit throughout the whole movie. It's about a 10 minutes.
Okay, go back and talk to that again. You were all breaking up on that one.
Okay, you were breaking up on me a little bit too.
So you were saying that we're not going to see him that much in this suit.
I doubt it. I mean, look at Batman vs Superman. That's probably going to be the longest time we ever see Batman in a suit like that for media was in Dawn of Justice. And here he might be in here a little bit shorter.
Yeah.
Usually when Batman has to put on suits like this, it's going to be for a short time. He's not going to be walking around the whole movie in his technical suit. It means probably when these the Dark Side henchmen? I forget the Parademons when they come through. This is probably going to be the suit he's going to have to wear.
Well, also they said that he actually is supposed to be. They show this new armor with shorter ears and goggles, and that comes with the promise of a brand new vehicle that requires him to wear this suit to pilot it properly.
Right.
So it's probably a new type of bat cycle.
Yeah, and we also talked about he's supposed to get a new ship or something.
He's got a new basically.
Months ago we talked about that.
Yeah, he's got a new mobile Justice League headquarters that's flying around. It's kind of like I equated it that anybody who's seen Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. seen the bus. It looks similar idea to that where it's basically a flying headquarters.
And we'll probably get the Hall of Justice too if he's a flying Justice League.
I hope we get a Hall of Justice. I mean, Zack Snyder's probably not going to make it look like the Hall of Justice, but.
Yeah. You know what? Knowing Zack Snyder, he might make it look almost identical as like the Hall of Justice. Yeah. I never know about that guy. He's some of the stuff you get, even like this technical suit. This was in the comic books. It's different from what we see, but most of the time he puts a comic book suit or any type of character on his screen. He tries to get them to look as close as the comic books as possible. So hopefully he'll do the same with the building.
Yeah. Well, actually, speaking of the comic books, like we said, a lot of people were equating this to look similar to Night Owl. But I guess if you put them side by side with this, with an actual picture of Night Owl, it's not that close. It just looks similar. But what it does look close to is, we've talked about it for a long time, that DC has the multiverse. And I guess in the multiverse, there is a Batman suit that looks very, very similar to this, but it's the Nazi Batman. It says, in the pages of DC Comics, The Multiverse, a series of alternate realities where history's changes result in different versions of the heroes and villains that fans know and love, has been incredibly important to history. Whether the expanding or contracting, providing a world-altering crisis, or giving us a peek into an Elseworlds where things played out in a shocking manner, the multiverse has been key since the Flashes of Two Worlds first met back in the 60s? Yeah. Now, in one such world, Earth 10, Batman and the rest of the Justice League work for a Nazi regime that won World War II. Itself a play on the Silver Age Earth X that also featured a world where the Germans had won World War II. Now, as the JL Access, created by Grant Morrison, Justin Gray, and Fabrizio Fiorentino, in Countdown to Adventure Number 2, these versions of Batman, Superman, and the others are agents of Adolf Hitler, still Führer after decades. Grant Morrison revisited the world in Multiversity Number 7, Mastermen, with art by Jim Lee and Scott Williams, where he gave another interpretation, wherein Overman, the Nazi-raised Superman, leads the new Reichman with Valkyrie, Brunhild, Unterwatermann, Blitzen, the Martian, and Leatherwing. Here the Batman whose parents were Nazis and still upholds the Reich's ideals. Here we get close looks at, or in the pictures that they show here, or in the picture they show here, they show a close look at Leatherman and the design with the mostly form-fitting armor and goggles over the cowl that looks strikingly like the Ben Affleck cowl for the tactical suit. So that may be where they got it from. I don't know why they would choose a Nazi Batman for that, but...
I wonder if Zack Snyder even thought about that.
I don't know.
What are you thinking of pictures of a Batman?
Yeah, like they said there, in the comic books, it seems like most of the alternate looks of Batman and the stuff you got... But then again, comic books are not trying to sell toys usually.
Right. They're just making the art.
Yeah. In movies, they got to market it somehow. That's why if you go to the store, Vicky and I were at the store yesterday and walk through the toy aisle and look at there's like 27 different Superman in different looks and armors and things.
It's
Superman doesn't use armor.
Right.
So
I was like that back in the 90s when they had the Justice League toys. Mm-hmm. Superman had to have armor too. Batman did, Green Arrow did, Aquaman did. And since in instances like that, it makes sense. But Superman, he is his own armor.
Pretty much. And then what it is you can only, if you make Superman, you're stuck with that one figure and that's it.
Right.
So, but do you want to cover the next one? You put the next article up here.
Yes, I did. This is news with the character Harley Quinn for Suicide Squad, from Suicide Squad. And I thought this was really awesome that we found an article on this. Harley Quinn, as I said before, was introduced in the Batman animated series. So if it was not for Batman, there would be no Harley Quinn. So as we were talking about before, and this has been going around the web, Margot Robbie really wanted to have her own solo Harley Quinn film. She loves that character so much. She enjoys playing her. She wouldn't mind doing this for years and years on end. So it looks like she got her wish. Margot Robbie is now getting a solo outing as Harley Quinn that she deserves. Margot Robbie signed an overall development product deal with Warner Brothers, and one of her first projects of the spinoff movie is the better half of Joker. Despite the pretty good or pretty poorly served severe Suicide Squad script, Margot Robbie is credited as being one of the major reasons why the film earned its $700 million worldwide grossing. As yet, we have no word on what the method actor Jared Leto will or will not return. But if he does, I think that would be really good. But there's also no director for the project as well. In addition, Margot Robbie will co-star in development of the film with her Lucky Chap Entertainment label. So she is going to get this. And also, this is going to be the second female lead superhero role from DC and Warner Brothers films besides Gal Gadot's Wonder Woman. So I think it's really interesting that all the female characters, Harley Quinn is going to be the next female to get a role besides besides Wonder Woman.
Mm-hmm.
But that just shows how our fan base has grown.
Yeah. Well, what gets me is you look at something on this caught my eye immediately. That so far, as of now, Suicide Squad has grossed $700 million. Now, for even a small budget, or even a big budget, where this was a big budget superhero film, that's a really good numbers. And yet,
yeah,
people still talk about this not being almost a lot of people are talking about it being a flop. This is far from being a flop. Batman v Superman brought in. Yeah. Well, let me bring up the numbers. Batman v Superman is another one that made way more than the money it cost to make the movie. But people are still saying, oh, how terrible it was. Well, if it was so terrible, how did it make, let's see, worldwide gross of Batman v Superman when it closed? $873 million.
Right.
That doesn't show that it's a terrible movie. If it's a bad movie,
right,
certain people will see it, but that's more than just comic fans that went to go see this movie.
And
you know?
The thing about Suicide Squad and Dawn Justice earned, like I said, a lot of money at the beginning, and then it kind of went down with Suicide Squad. Last time I checked, I think it was 3 weeks ago, it was at $500 million, and now I'm reading this article now and it's saying it even climbed up 200 more million than I've seen before. So
yeah, well, here, let me the weekly numbers for Batman v Superman, it's actually just a steady drop through the run.
Okay.
It was not, I mean, there was a drastic first week to second week, but if I remember right, most of the movies many movies do that, not most of them, but many movies do that. Let me go back to the beginning of this thing. Worldwide, Captain America 3. Let's just see what in the weekly totals for Captain America 3. Yeah, Captain America 3 went first week, they made $223 million. Second week, $90 million for Civil War.
So, as you said, it went down.
Yeah, it went down drastically. Where Batman v Superman did $209 million, which is not quite as big, and they had $64 million the second week. So it's about a very similar drop. Let's see what other big out of the worldwide top films for this year. The top five were Captain America 3, Zootopia, Jungle Book, Finding Dory, and Batman v Superman. Jungle Book is one that let's see where their weekly totals. They only opened at $130 million, and they dropped to $78 million.
Drastically.
So everybody drops that after that first week. I think a lot of people are looking for Warner Brothers or DC Comics films to do this stuff, to be terrible. So they're like, oh, well, they dropped drastically, 60% or 70% less the next week. most of your movies out there do that. Everybody goes out to see the premiere, and then people that didn't see the premiere then eventually work their way in to go see it.
Right.
So it's like these movies have been successful.
Yeah, and it really has. That's why when I like it's flopping, it's like, no, it's not. Critics don't like it, but the fans and just regular old moviegoers, they're loving it.
There's one other one. There's one more I'm going to look up, because Man of Steel we know was not a flop. But the last one that you could think that was possibly a flop for...
Sorry, I don't want to cut you off here, but I just got a picture from my friend, and this is actually Christy sent me a photo. She's at Walmart in the toy aisle looking at all the comic book stuff. Harley Quinn is in the middle between Captain America and Spider-Man.
Nice.
When would you ever think her toy would be that popular?
Mm-hmm.
Just going back to what we were reading with the arc of her getting on solo, I'm just crazy to see that all this from the Batman animated series spawned off a great character like that.
Yeah. I don't have all of the details. There it is. The last time that DC put out a flop was obviously Green Lantern.
Green Lantern, yeah.
Okay. I didn't have major problems. I saw the problems with it, but I still thought that it had some great fun stuff in it.
Yeah,
but
the thing about Green Lantern, you know how you feel about Superman Returns, how most people say they hate the movie?
Yeah.
And that's how I feel about Green Lantern. I didn't hate the movie. It just was off. Now, there's a lot of things about that was wrong. I'm not going to say it was the
best movie of all
time. I
think they tried too hard.
Yeah, but I could still go in there as a Green Lantern fan and say, the story, but the character, that's Green Lantern.
Yeah. And so, watching it, that was Green Lantern.
Right, and it wasn't something so bad where I can't watch again. If someone popped it in, I wouldn't complain. I might make some jokes about why they do this or why they do that, but I won't tell them to, like, take it out or anything like that. It's not that bad.
Well, but, Green Lantern...
Yeah, that was technically a flop, though. Mm-hmm. Even the actor didn't like that.
Well, the budget was $200 million.
Mm-hmm.
They actually made, in their overall run, they still made their money back. They made total of a $219 million. So even as a flop, it made its money back. So it's like DC hasn't had one that's lost money that I know of yet.
Right. I think with DC, they make mistakes, but they never completely lose out completely for their money. It's like, hey, we can do this again. We'll try again. Get up off the ground, wipe ourselves off, and go back at it.
So let me see what else. I think, the only other one I have here for a news story would be we've talked about how Detective Comics is killing it. It's one of my favorite titles every month or every 2 weeks. But James Tynion III, or the fourth, who's actually writing Detective, got signed this week to an exclusive deal with DC Comics. They've been doing this with a lot of their writers, which is awesome because that means they can focus on what DC's doing. It says,
right, and they're they're also using their writers right too, so they're not just signing these guys and putting them to waste. They actually get to work and start making great books.
Exactly. So it says, DC Entertainment adds more phenomenal talent to its creative roster, announcing today, as of September 14th, that the New York Times bestselling author James Tynion IV will create comic books content solely for the company's DC and Vertigo imprints. Tynion has written for such titles as Batman Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Batman Eternal, and Constantine the Hellblazer, and is currently the writer of fan favorite Detective Comics. As we said, that's one of my favorite titles they're doing right now. Since
one of the
its relaunch in June,
right now.
Now, DC is home of. Now, this is a quote from Tynion. It says, "DC is the home of my favorite characters in the comics industry, and now I'm getting the chance to write a whole lot of those characters twice a month in Detective Comics, the comic book that gives our great company its name. Being part of the DC family has been a dream. And I'm happy to make it official. We are already working on amazing stories coming for the next few years, and I can't wait to get the chance to write them." Now, Tynion's association with The Dark Knight is extensive. He began his career co-writing Batman's Night of the Owl storyline, as well as working on other Bat family members with his work on Batman Eternal, Talon, Batman and Robin Eternal, and the popular DC IDW crossover Batman TMNT. Now, his current run on Detective Comics displays an epic team-up that has never been seen before in Gotham. As a new threat arises, Batman will... we've already know most of the stuff here, that how he puts together the team of, spoiler, Red Robin, Cassie Kane, or Cassandra Kane, and even Clayface. But and then we also have Orphan in there that they didn't mention. So then it says... Bob Harris, the editor-in-chief for DC, says, "We're incredibly excited that James is coming aboard as part of the DC talent family. You can see his love and enthusiasm for every member of the Batman cast on every issue or every page of his current run on Detective Comics. Fans are going to be on the edge of their seats when they see that what James has got coming." And then the rest is just the stuff that we already know, that he was announced to be doing Detective back in WonderCon and stuff. But it's cool that... Now, we've not been covering these. Like, almost weekly, we're getting these things that they're being signed on exclusively. So we may start covering these more. DC's got a lot of guys that they've signed on to work just for them so that they can focus on DC Comics.
I think it's great because, like I said, they're actually putting these talents to work, and we get their work from them. It's great. And for the next couple of years that they're there, we'll know we get a good reading from each one of them. And I think a lot of this also is from Scott Snyder. From his Batman run, see what he was doing. And every time it seemed like he gets on a Batman book, it just sells.
Oh, yeah.
So I think they learn from that. The more, if you get a writer that's consistent with the character, you don't have to keep getting all these different writers to make something new. Just get them and they can recreate it and keep putting out good detail with their story.
Yeah. So that, I think that covered most of the Batman stories we had here. Was there anything else you wanted to talk about Batman before we get into our reviews for the week?
Oh, there's always more I can talk about Batman.
Well, one we haven't talked about that Batman has been very popular in another type of media was you've played most of the Batman games out there.
Oh yeah, you know what? So, we talked about that.
What's one of your favorite Batman games? I've not played much in the video games, so.
It's a tough cross between Batman Arkham Asylum and Arkham City.
Okay.
Arkham City felt more like, both of them felt like the animated series. I think it was probably because of Paul Dini was working on both of them, but Arkham City had more of the villains in there, so I probably have to say that one. Basically, Arkham City was whoever watched the animated series as a kid and grew up with it, or even if you were, say, in your 20s and a couple years later you have the video game, you'll still feel like this is the animated series, but for grown-ups. And it just was really good with the character development. With the villains were on point, the heroes were great, and they even threw so many Easter eggs from the comic books and the animated series in there. It also brought back a little bit of nostalgia for me.
Yeah.
And, it also was a big enough roaming area where you could fly around the city and you could grapple everywhere, and you just felt like Batman. In Arkham Asylum, it felt like a great Batman story, but I didn't feel like I was Bruce Wayne or Batman. And we also got to play as Bruce Wayne too in Arkham City and Catwoman.
Cool. Well, hopefully sometime soon I'll be able to try these out, because I now have a copy of both of those sitting by my Xbox.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you popped one in yet.
Not yet. As soon as I get it, I've not had time to do anything. Vicky and I played about 10 minutes of one of the Harry Potter Lego games the other day, and that's the only thing I've played for the last 3 weeks.
I downloaded the demo of that. Start replaying the Batman Lego 3.
Yeah.
And you can just be any character in there you want. You don't have to play Batman. But I need to get more Lego games. Those are really fun.
Oh, yeah.
And by the way, they're also having the Telltale video game of Batman, I wanted to say. That comes out, I want to say, either next week or the week after.
Oh, nice.
For episode 2. And in there, you can team up with Catwoman once again. But the good thing about this Telltale episode is the first time they ever did this, where you can actually play the same character but different personas of the character. Meaning you can play the whole episode as Bruce Wayne and do what you have to do for him and get the same answers. So, you know, basically go undercover, be a detective.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can be Batman and just go straight up the superhero route. I'm going to have to play both, so I'll replay the episode 2 times to see how I can... be a good detective or just be a good Batman.
Awesome. You have to let us know how that game is.
We'll do. Once it all comes out, I'll probably we can have a review episode on here if you want, or at least talk about that in the reviews.
Yeah, we could. This is DC all things DC Comics, so we cover I want to cover everything, the TV, the collectibles we do once in a while, we do all that stuff. So yeah, video games fits right in there with it. But talking of differences with reviews, we're going to get into the Rebirth reviews here. But starting probably next week, since we have TV starting to come back too, to keep these from being a 3-hour episode, I mean, if Super Friends, if you want us to cover all the comics still and all the TV reviews, let us know. Send us an email. Hit us up on Facebook. let us know if you'd like to. Right now, we're thinking we're going to find a way that we're not going to be able to review every Rebirth title every week anymore because there's just not enough time. But if you guys want it, we'll keep it going. We will do all of them. But I'm thinking either we'll review all the Rebirth number one special number ones. Like this week, we have Cyborg Rebirth number one. And this week, we're still doing all the comics. But I'm thinking we do maybe the first four or five issues of each book, or the first story arc, whenever the first story arc finishes, and then we can let it go. And if something special happens that big, we can still go back and redo them. But as of right now, I think we're going to only be doing the first story arc of each issue for the reviews. We're still reading all of them. But in order to make time so we can do other things on the show, we're going to have to limit a little bit about the way we do this. But like I said, if you guys want us to continue doing every Rebirth banner title, send us a message at DCSuperpowersPodcast@gmail.com. Hit us up on Facebook. Hit us up on Twitter. Let us know what you want us to do. So I'm willing to keep going but it's a little long usually. So I don't know about you, Vernon. I think we've discussed this. That's the way I think we're going to do it.
Yeah, I'm down for that. It seems like it just makes more sense.
Yeah. So, but speaking of reviews, we have this week's comic reviews from September 7th. And you want to take the first one, and then we'll just go back and forth and figure where we go?
Sure. The first review we actually have here, guys, is Aquaman. This issue is a little different from what we've seen in the past couple of weeks with Aquaman, because Superman actually joined them, we saw in the last issue, but he was not there to help Aquaman exactly. He was there to just get the situation under control. And, as you guys know, as I said before, the military was attacking Aquaman and Mira, and they had to just go through the whole military to get to the ocean. Now, these Atlanteans have really tough skin, so all the guns and rockets they were shooting at them messed up their clothes a little bit and hurt them minor, but overall it did nothing. So they had to call in the big boy, the big Boy Scout in blue to fix everything. So Superman's there, and he's conversating with Aquaman, and he's trying to tell him, you need to stop doing all this. I don't know what's going on right now, but you can't fix a situation with war. He's trying to tell them, I didn't start the war. It's a big misunderstanding, and I'm trying to fix this. So if you let me get to Atlantis, I can do so. Superman's talking to him like, hey, hold on. Grabs him by the shoulder, and now it's the fight between two gods, basically.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I want to know is this is the new Superman. The traditional Superman that is hiding on the farm and no one knows who. How did the president call him?
The problem with all these titles in here, I have no idea how far they are with the Justice League. I don't know if they're formed right now or what. They're just showing Aquaman's story. Same with Batman, Wonder Woman, Superman. I have no idea how this all ties together. So at this point in time, they might have not even seen each other until now. Okay. Or at least this Superman. So,
well, no, according to this, it said, because you find out later when they're talking about how they all are working together. So, and Superman seems to know what he's talking about.
True, and this is where he punches Superman. He says, the beloved trend of you, Diana, and Batman, and then it's the loyal, true trio of Lantern, Flash, and Cyborg, adored by the public. Then me, the Moloch on the outside. And so Superman says, you think we see you as an outsider or a black sheep? Is that how you see yourself? And he said, yeah, I always have been. And actually, he's been right, because even in Justice League, he was the one that always got picked on with the jokes, like not even in comic books, just people talking.
Yeah.
All you can do is talk to fish, which is completely false, but, you know, you see him as the fish guy. But he's going toe-to-toe with Superman and taking him out pretty good. Then his wife, or girlfriend at the time, also gets a punch in on him.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going back and forth saying, you're out of control, you need to let me go. And he's trying to get his point across saying, no, I'm not, no one's listening to me, I'm trying to fix this, but no one's letting me do so. And then they stop fighting for a little bit, and they notice that there's the Atlantean war coming up now with these beasts being controlled by Atlanteans, and their hovercrafts and these ships out of the sea with water just dripping on them.
Coming to save their king.
Right, but Aquaman's like, guys, this is not what I want. This does not look good. They think we're on war here, but we're not. So the more weapons we bring out, the worse this looks for Atlanteans. And later on in the panels of the story, we find out that the guy that Black Manta went to go see, the guy that's being praised and being called Captain Nemo, he seems like a pretty decent guy. He doesn't really look like a villain. I didn't really get that from him. He looks like a jolly old slimmer Santa Claus. He's an Antarctic white beard coat on. And he's talking to Black Manta about how he's the ruler and how he does this and how he does that. Black Manta walks up to him and stabs him in the throat and says, well, now I'm your new ruler, so you're going to have to listen to me. Any questions? So he killed the old jolly guy and took over. And now we see a Mira and Aquaman running to Atlantis. And this is the dialogue. Very sure. I'm just going to read you word for word. Mira asks Aquaman, were you sure? Were you threatened by Superman? Aquaman says, yes. He says, was he serious? He said, absolutely. What does that mean? It means I really have to fix this.
Well, that goes back to the last thing, the last conversation with Batman or with Superman and Aquaman. Aquaman stops the fleet from attacking, tells them to hold fire, hold their fire, and says, return to the water.
Right.
And then he says, I've got to stop this war. Then he looks, Superman said, are you still going to stop me from doing this? And Superman tells him straight up, fix this or else.
Fix it or else. Mm-hmm. And that's what led Mira to say, was he serious? Mm-hmm. Yeah, Superman. And we all know how strong he is. I don't want none of those problems.
No. So that was Aquaman number 6. And this storyline's going for a while because this is the same story arc that started in the beginning, isn't it?
All right. I wonder if they're going to end on issue number 7 or 8.
I don't know.
But it's going really good. And I'm really liking this Aquaman book because, like I said, it's showing the political side of the heroes. That's Aquaman right now. Also, boy, just read this book. He is the black sheep. There is a reason. He also told Superman, if you were to be under attack, which we should know this, the government has tried to make you look like a bad guy too, but you are Superman. I'm Aquaman, so when I look bad, no one wants to really help me.
Yeah. Next one we got up is actually Batman number 6, and I was telling our buddy Bart, and I think you, that this is quite possibly one of my favorite issues. The ending of this issue is one of my favorite issues of Batman I've ever read. This shows so phenomenally the idea of where Batman is now.
Yeah, and his not even his mental state, just him. He seems like a father right now.
Exactly.
That's what really the best way I can put it. Batman just seems like a really good dad. He might be a little hard on you, but at the end of the day, he will still hug you and tell you he loves you, which, you know, we will see later on in this book.
Well, this starts off, this is actually the epilogue to the whole I Am Gotham storyline with Gotham and Gotham Girl. Remember, Hank, Gotham died last issue. Their powers for Gotham Girl, we found out that used their life force to give them powers. So the more they use their superpowers, the closer they get to dying. Well, this starts off Claire, I believe. I got to remember her name. But Gotham Girl has pretty much had a break at this point. She's lost everything. Her parents are dead. Her brother is dead. All that's left is the city out here. So she cuts all of her hair off and buzzes it down just a buzz cut. And this takes place over the course of a week, it looks like. On Monday, she cuts all her hair off and is talking to her brother the whole time. Okay, this
Which
whole
is
issue,
dead.
She's sitting there talking to her brother. On Tuesday, she actually takes down, now these are villains that are in here that I've never heard of, so I don't know if they're just undercard villains or if they're brand new for this, but we have Colonel Blimp that supposedly has stolen a submarine from Gotham City, and he's ransoming it for $30 million. And Gotham Girl breaks in, still talking to Hank the whole time, takes him down, drops him off at the police station, and moves on. Then she's still talking to him the whole time. On Wednesday, you have, now I'm drawing a blank. What's his name in the cave? His new partner.
Oh, you're talking about Duke.
Duke, yes. Sorry. We have Duke in the cave talking to Batman. Oh, there it is. It says how Gotham Girl's back out rescuing again. Her brother's dead. Her parents are dead. She's been driven half mad by a psycho pirate. And he says, I know this. And he says, he reminds her that every time she uses her power, it's killing her. And Batman tells her, I know this. And he tells Batman, we have to save her. And Batman says again, I know. So he knows all this stuff too. Then we get a nice big 2-page splash page from Thursday of Gotham flying over the city admiring, or Gotham Girl flying over the city admiring how beautiful the city is. We move to Friday, and she's flying over the city doing her rounds, and she hears someone talking. And this is another one of those second or fifth string villains that we don't know about named Captain Stingery. And he's got 4 guys tied up that are obviously not Batman. On top of a building with a plank hanging off the building, and he's a pirate, and he's convinced somehow in his brain that all of these guys are Batman, so he's going to kill the Batman, so he's going to force all four of these guys to walk the plank. And these are his henchmen, by the way, they're talking to him. He's saying, Carl, don't do this. So they know who this guy is for some reason. But he throws one of the
Scarface when I was reading this.
Yeah.
Well, he's a little bipolar.
Oh, just a little. But he forces one of them off the plank and off the building. And Gotham Girl grabs him, brings him up. She's still talking to her brother the whole time. And takes down Captain Stingery and knocks him out. Then you hear Batman talk to her, Gotham Girl. He says, we need to talk. And then the whole time she's still talking to her brother. Talks about, Hank, do you see this? First there's a pirate and now there's Batman. So he's trying to help her, tell her that you need help. We can figure this out. All these things. And the whole time she's still talking about how this is awesome. I'm talking to Batman. And then she looks and says, it's Batman. Then she flies away, says, it was really Batman. The next one's kind of interesting because it's Bruce talking to Alfred and says, when it happened with my mother and father, how did you help me? He asks Alfred over the radio.
This is good.
And Alfred comes over the radio and says, Master Bruce, with all due respect, each night you leave the perfectly this perfectly lovely house and go leaping off buildings dressed as a giant bat. Do you think I really helped you?
No, as he punches the pirate right in the chin again.
The pirate guy that decided to wake up. Well, then we move on to Saturday, and you have, what was his name? Kite Man breaks into a party. And as he does that, Gotham Girl captures him and takes him to the police station. And as she takes off to the police station, all of a sudden she's hit with the bat signal. She looks and sees Batman has turned on the bat signal, so she goes down to talk to him and tells him, hey, I'm here to help. I thought maybe I could, or I'm not here to help you this time. I thought maybe I could help. Now, this next part, I kind of, once we get there, I got to read the whole thing. But I thought maybe you could help me, is what he said. You could help Batman, like you're helping the city.
Mm-hmm.
It says he needs to know something. He needs to know why she's helping the city. And so she's still talking to Batman. She's talking to her brother and says, hey, would Batman actually understand this? No one understands it really except for me. And you always understood what we were doing, why we're helping the city. So, she's talking how it hurts to be so alone. And when she's helping the city, it hurts less. It doesn't hurt as bad. So, the next scene, you got to kind of read the whole page because this is one of the greatest scenes I think I've ever read for Batman. This Gotham Girl says, so there's not like a choice, is there, Hank? You're talking to her brother still. You just have to help the city.
He's with them.
Then Batman says, Goth Claire, he takes his hood off. He says, my name is Bruce Wayne. When I was 10 years old, a man murdered my mother and father in front of me. Before the police, when I could only hear them, I held her, my mother's hand. It wasn't cold, but there was blood on it. My father was a good man, but I could never talk. He was very formal. But I could always just talk to my mother. She was the only one. And now, then, there was blood on her hand. But I just started, I talked, even with the blood and the sirens. I talked to her. I had to. I still have to. And at this point, they're hugging. He's trying to help her, or comfort her. And then she whispers, I don't feel good. And he says, I know. I miss him. I know. I just miss him. And she's crying. And he finishes off with, I know.
Yeah, she's bawling right now.
He finally got her to be able to just relax and help her start moving because they've been through something so similar. And he opened up his soul basically to her.
Yeah.
So this is the perfect Batman for me personally. I love Batman this way, where he's dark and scary for the villains, but he's helping the people that he can help.
Yeah, and on this cover, but from the cover, it's Batman chasing down Gotham Girl, but in the book, once you read it, it's the complete opposite.
Mm-hmm.
And he's trying to chase her down so he can comfort her. All he wants to do is just talk to her, and I'm glad he figured this out through time. And this is just something with Batman we haven't seen in a while, him actually being, a father, a great father.
Well, then the final scene, the final page is on to Sunday, and it's Batman talking to Waller, to Amanda Waller again, and talking about how he needs Psycho Pirate, because that's the only one that can actually fix Claire, because he's the one that did the damage. Well, Waller told him, well, Psycho Pirate, Hugo Strange, turned him over to Bane in Santa Prisca prison. So that's where Psycho Pirate is. And this prison, you can't get into. It's the most dangerous place in the world, basically. So it basically comes down to Waller has a team that can go in there and get him for you. And that's if you work with me in the way I want you to do it, I have a team who can go in and get Psycho Pirate for you. And she said it's going to be, one might even say it's suicide. So this actually sets up the storyline right. of I Am Bane, which we don't get until mid-October. Because the next two issues of Detective Comics are going to be the Night of the Monster Men crossover with between Batman Detective and Nightwing.
But it's going to be Batman, Batwoman, and Nightwing.
Doing it, yes.
So and this I think this is also leading into I Am Suicide is going to be the part one in introducing us to the Justice League Suicide Squad crossover.
Yeah, I Am Bane is going to lead us into that. So,
which, we just got done talking about Bane earlier in the show, too, exactly. Which I think was kind of funny.
But that was Detective number 6, one of my favorite, especially that scene. That scene is one of my favorite scenes I've ever read for Batman. So,
now, for his next issue, there's going to be some questions I'll probably ask you because I was in class reading this book before the teacher walked in, so I had to skim through it. But I think I got more so the main part of the story.
Yeah.
Well, this next one on our list is a Rebirth title. First one we've had for this month, and since Rebirth came out, Cyborg Rebirth issue number 1. Reading this, it was really weird for me because I'm so used to seeing Cyborg as a Teen Titan. It's just really odd and off-putting to see him just as a Justice League member. So it's this big cybernetic monster that's attacking the city, and Cyborg's having to stop it, and he's going through communication with his father back at Star Labs. And I do like in here, they actually show Victor's human side of his face.
Yeah.
He got a little bloody. That was pretty realistic. So this thing throws Cyborg off the top of some type of building, and he hits the pavement pretty hard. He's knocked out, and there's blood coming out of his nose, and he got some gases on his face. That was really good.
It's actually attacking Star Labs in Detroit.
Okay,
so that's why when they're talking about his dad and stuff, they're all in Star Labs also.
Okay.
So that,
and speaking of,
it's got something in Star Labs it's trying to get to.
Okay. And speaking of his father, this is basically just like a little origin story of what happened to Cyborg and what's going on right now. But to start from an origin story, you need to lead back to your parents. So his father was a college student, and he was testing some stuff in the lab. And one of his buddies brings in this girl that says she's a big fan of Silas Stone, which is Victor's father. And then they start talking. They start hitting off pretty good. As time goes on, they go to a party. They have fun. Next thing you know, they're getting married. Then after that, they're having a baby. And they have Victor. And as the father and mother were saying, he is our greatest work yet, because both of them were scientists. But they will never be able to create anything as beautiful as their baby son.
Mm-hmm.
This whole thing
is actually being narrated by someone who seems to be testing Cyborg to find out his capabilities and stuff. It's all the narrator in this. All the yellow boxes are narration from someone who's watching it from the outside looking in and testing to make sure his response times, how fast he's going to wake up. It tests his DNA to make sure that he is who they think he is. He's his biological father is Silas Stone, and then it goes through the story of how Silas had met his mother and how he became a father.
Right. And in these dialogue boxes, it's also, this guy knows exactly what year or whatever this thing is, how many months, how many weeks, how many days, how many minutes, how many hours, how many seconds Victor was inside his mom's belly. And he's going to refer to Victor as Agent or Subject Zero.
Exactly. For me, I think it's actually, it's some kind of artificial intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the way how accurate it is, down to the second of
yeah, it reminds
everything.
Me of a robot talking right now.
Mm-hmm.
And next panel, we see Cyborg going back, and his father, his father's friend, I don't know who his other colleague is or coworker of them, is in the lab. And then Victor's crush, I want to say, I think her name's Sarah.
Okay.
And Cyborg's still battling this thing. This also is a mechanical monster, so even his dialogue sounds robotic. and he's taking it to Victor pretty good. Victor is not holding off his on his own too well. And now he's unconscious again. And now he's remembering when his mother was died and she was were dying and she was unconscious and there was nothing they could do for her. So Silas took it upon himself to find a cure. He's smart enough where he can help her. That is his wife and mother of his son. Mm-hmm. And despite all this, Victor's getting older. And every time he tried to play his father, every time, and this was shown even in Justice League New 52, Cyborg's dad was always just too
never
hard
had
at
time
work.
For
no
him.
Time.
Yeah, he had too much work to do.
Right. But his mother always did, just as we heard from Batman, the previous one. He couldn't talk to his father, but his mom was always there to talk to. She started playing with him, grabbed his toys, hugged him, telling him everything's going to be okay.
Well, the thing was, they also showed in here, there was an interesting point, was the fact that Victor didn't know his mom had cancer. He didn't know why his father and mother were so busy all the time. All he knew was that they didn't have time for him.
And this is why, because he was trying to figure out a way to save his mother, not understanding the only reason his dad didn't want to play with him was to save their mom, or his mom. And he's older now when his mother passed away. He was like he was in high school or college football. I can't really tell which one
it was.
High
school, I believe.
High school, okay. That makes sense because he became Cyborg with college. Gave him some years for him and his father to become farther apart after his mother died. And now we go back to when Victor starts waking up again from the second time he's been unconscious fighting this monster. The monster has gotten out and he must complete his mission. And as the panel goes by, we see them talking, saying, Silas, we need a safety trigger. Something's going on here. Cyborg may not be able to stop this thing. And then this goes back to when Victor first touched the mother box. And this was Mother Box from Apocalypse, burned half his body off, blew off some of his limbs, his leg, his arm, disfigured him, just completely disfigured him.
Well, no, he was in an accident, and the Mother Box actually fixed him, remember?
Well, that's well, technically, the Mother Box is the reason he got into that explosion. He touched the Mother Box, and that's what caused all this to happen.
Oh, okay.
Then, from the alien technology, it also made him Cyborg, so it hurt him. The best way I can put it, it killed Victor Stone and made Cyborg.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is how we got to know Cyborg fighting with the Justice League. That's the this was actually one of the best pictures in this whole comic. But I would actually like to see this as a variant cover.
Yeah.
But Cyborg's trying to stop this this creature, and this is where I was in school and I started just skimming through here.
Okay.
So I like to help me out if I miss some detail. If you want to.
Okay. Well, we find out the explosion that actually did that was in what they're calling the Red Room in Star Labs. Which is where they keep all the alien tech that they're researching and stuff. So they go to the Red Room actually to fix Victor because Silas couldn't lose his wife and his son. So then they go through showing that Cyborg has become a part of the Justice League. Then they find out that because this malware monster is actually attacking Star Labs and actually heading for the Red Room. Well, then he doesn't stop. He goes through the Red Room and continues. So now they're trying to figure out, okay, now where are we going with this? He ends up stopping in an area that's not on any of the maps. No one has any idea what this place is. It's not on the maps. It's basically a blacked out area of Star Labs. No one even knows this room exists. So the whole time, Malware's talking and Victor's talking back and forth. Victor finds out this room is actually a data dead zone too. Because this version of Cyborg, remember, can access the internet through Wi-Fi and everything else. All the time. He's always got data flowing in and out of him through the internet. But
he's a walking computer, literally.
Mm-hmm. Well, instead, now that he's actually in the digital dead zone, he can actually completely concentrate on taking out this malware guy. So, he can concentrate all of his CPU activity on fighting it. And, when it comes to firewalls, mine is bigger than yours and badder than yours. And he actually is able to hack this cybernetic monster. Well, so he takes down the monster, shuts it down, it's done, disintegrates all the systems, but as he does that, the creature had broken into this room in this dead zone, and you start to get these recordings come up, and it's Victor's father, talking about how the database holds the encrypted source code for one of his most dangerous software programs he ever created. It is the CPU for the experiment known as Cyborg. When faced with the prospect of losing my son, I was forced to make a decision, one that would probably reverberate throughout the history of mankind, and with that choice came a mystery I chose to create, I chose to create a new kind of human being, part man, part machine. But in doing so, arose a question. I love my son more than life itself, but in my zeal to keep him alive, Had I, in fact, preserved his life, his essence, or had I created a technological shell, a ghost, that simply replicated my son? So that all of his ideas of all his father is like, is Cyborg actually my son, or is he just the computer saying he's my son? And Victor's heard all this. So then that starts obviously putting doubts into his brain, into his mind, because after he's done feeding the monster, he's sitting on the roof just going through that conversation again. Then in the last two pages, you get the actual villain that was controlling some of this, and it looks like another cybernetic organism. And this guy's actually looking at all the different robots and artificial intelligences and stuff that are on the Earth,
and
trying to control them all.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool. We got to see Steel, Red Tornado, Cyborg Superman even, the Metal Men. I can't really make out who these other characters are.
You got a Brainiac in there.
That's actually not Brainiac. That's one of the villains from Teen Titans. I cannot think of his name.
Well, underneath that, you actually see Mr. Robot from Doom Patrol on the bottom, one of the bottom screens.
Oh, okay. That's who that is. I was like, who that?
Yeah, that's Mr. Robot. On the top left, who is that one with like the kind of a green face? You know, recognize that one?
Is that Amazo?
I don't know.
I think that's Amazo.
Or top right. Sorry, it's top right.
Top right. With a
Do you know who that is? Right above Cyborg Superman.
Right. No, I don't. I can't make out who that is.
Okay. Well, it says in the last panel, whoever this is says, "I am the father. I am the father who will give Cyborg everything he's ever needed." So it looks like he sees himself as the father of all the machines and such. This is the guy that's been talking the whole time and testing Cyborg. So we'll find out in Cyborg number one who this guy is probably and see where we're going from there. So. And the next one we got up is actually Green Arrow. And, Green Arrow's on me, isn't it? Or do you have Harley?
No, I do not.
Well, I know you have Green Arrow. Why don't you go ahead and do Green Arrow, and I'll do Harley after that.
Okay. This Green Lantern comic was really just...
Don't you mean Green Arrow?
It's a Green Lantern, thank you.
This is actually the beginning of the next story arc on this, so...
And this was all focused on Emiko. This the story had really nothing to do with Green Arrow at all. This is just Emiko's background story of... how she got to know her brother. She needs to be the new Speedy. That needs to happen immediately, by the way. But he's they're showing her old times, her and Ollie going through the city, helping people out, actually. Now, the reason why this is just focused on her, in the last last book we've had, they took down the inner gate, I think that was what they called. The inner circle.
Yes. Ninth circle.
And Ollie... Yes, thank you. They Ollie was stuck on an island. Emiko got kidnapped by her mother, Shadow. Diggle and Black Canary went about their way on a different ship, so they're all separate at this point. But Emiko is still with her mother being kidnapped, and she's asleep right now. She's dreaming about when her and Ollie would fight. But here's the problem. Ollie and her mother are trying to kill her in her nightmare. And she wakes up, and her mother says, "You've ruined everything." She's like, "Why? Because I didn't want you to... wanted you to help the Ninth Circle do what they had to do." She said, "No, Ollie was not the only one that was the double agent." So it's like, oh, great, the plot has thickened. And nobody's really who they say they are. So Green Arrow was undercover, so was Shadow. I think her motives were still a little bit worse than his, but she was still trying to help. And now she's thinking about 1 year ago when she was in Seattle with Ollie. He let her live there, and they were having a little argument. And he said, "If you slam this door one more time, I'm going to take your door away from you." And she slams it. So he says, "I told you what I'd do." He rips the hinges off, screws them out, and takes the door away. Say, "You'll get it back once you wash the windows." But after they get done arguing, as brother and sister will do, he starts training her same way he would train himself. They're saving the day from these criminals, just being the heroes that the city deserves. But Emiko later finds out it's this wristwatch that this guy is wearing. And something about it... that looked familiar, so she needs to investigate that. And now it goes back to previously. Now in Tokyo, she's with her mother, and she's telling her Emiko that she had everything under control. The Okazuna gave Dante to repay for the debts, but they still did not trust him, so it was a contract that she was working on to take him down. But Ollie got there before she did. Then they go to their temple, and they start praying, getting all the demons out of their mind, but they still start arguing and saying she should listen to her mother and stop always going on her brother's decision. You're becoming just like him, hard-headed and not thinking. And then Emiko tells her mother, but nobody's I'm nobody's property or nobody's sidekick. And she throws the fire that they were praying with into her mother's face, not to blind her or burn her or anything, but enough to distract her as she gets away. Now she's thinking back then in Seattle. There's this watch store that she went into to find out where that guy got his watch from, what made it so special. And then the store owner here, now this guy looks like he should be the new Clock King. He has a clock tattoo on the side of his
face. Well, also, the name of his shop is the Clock King.
Oh, I missed that little part. So is this a new Clock King then?
It's possible.
That would make a lot of sense. I want to see him come back. But then he looks at her ID and says she can pay. And he says, oh, I can help with this. Here's the watch that will make you feel like you've got the whole world or got most time in the world. Now we're back in Tokyo again, what's going on now. She goes to this club, but this club also has more things inside of it besides just music, booze, and things like that. She's going down, and there's this bodyguard that tells her, you can't come in here, you must go play with friends, little girl. She grabs him by the testicles and tells him, let me in, and, you know, he cannot refuse. So he goes down. It's actually a battleground for these fighters, and they look like they fight to the death.
Yes, it's a Yakuza battleground.
Yakuza battleground, thank you. And this guy, who is this guy? I cannot figure out. He looks familiar.
They never said a name.
Okay, with this tattoo, he has the Japanese sun tattooed on his entire chest and torso. But after he kills the guy that was in the ring with him, like the sumo wrestler, he kisses his feet.
Kissing his feet. I think that's actually just bowing to him.
Is he
it just looks like
was...
it's drawn weird.
Okay, I want to make sure later on. Just want to make sure if that was a thing or what.
I'm hoping he's just bowing to him.
I think they're bowing to him, but their nose touches their foot, or lips at least look like they're touching the foot. But so Emiko's like, hey, you won the fight. I want to go against you. Next fight's mine. He's just thinking to himself, wait a minute. This kid should be in bed. She shouldn't be fighting me. Then we go back into Seattle. It was these bank robbers. So Emiko and Green Arrow steps up to duty and tries to stop these bank robbers from what they're doing. They do. They catch one of them, removes the mask off one of them, and where is this right here? The other two girls get away while the guy stays behind, and Ollie takes off his mask. And now we go back to what's going on in the current time right now. But now she's also remembering the watch. This, like I said, this thing kind of jumps everywhere right now. This is just Emiko's mind.
Part of the story is that here, the people that were robbing the bank back at the beginning where she finds the watch, the kids with the watches are all the popular kids at school and all the brainiacs, all the people that are really super smart that seem like they have all the time in the world to get everything done they need. Then they find out the kids that they have that were robbing the bank were these super popular kids, which Emiko's like, now, wait a minute. Why are the super popular kids robbing a bank? So she goes back to the Clock King she goes back to the Clock King to find out what in the world's going on. Then he says,
there's a drug technically that he's giving these kids.
The watch is a hyperstimulant and it speeds you up so that you can actually get a hyper focus on your SATs. You can hyper focus on whatever's going on. The problem is,
it becomes a life support, because the more you wear, it becomes your heart, really. And if you take that off, your heart will stop.
And the only way you can rewind it to keep it going is to pay him to return it back to rewind it.
Right. So this Clock King is thinking on a wider scale. So now we go back, and then Emiko's being held by him, and she says she loves the feeling. So I said thank you by Ollie. And he also has a watch on him as well.
The same one.
Mm-hmm. And now we go back to Tokyo now. She is handling herself pretty well against this guy. She's throwing the arrows at him, and he's dodging them, throwing this some type of whip with a dagger on the end of it.
Yeah, he's got basically almost two handheld spears with a wire or a line connecting them.
Yeah, and this is a peculiar weapon I never even heard of before. I want to look this up, see if it exists, or just the comic book writer's idea. But she does take him down. She grabs her arrows and she stabs him in the traps. Traps always on each side, and he falls down. Pretty sure she killed him. She does the same thing to his feet. She bows down to him and I don't know what kind of ritual that is, but I guess that's paying a sign of respect. But then it's these guards there saying, congratulations, you're in victory, and we must discuss your future. Emiko Queen, they know who she is, and they're pointing guns for her. And it looked like the people in the crowd are also pointing guns at her as well. There's other bodyguards or henchmen coming up there to try to stop her. So,
oh, yeah.
That was Green Arrow issue number 6. Okay. Emiko needs to get back to Ollie as soon as possible.
Well, the next one we got up is actually Harley Quinn number 3. And this one still is, for me, one of the surprise really great titles, because I've never read Harley Quinn. And like we said before, I'm not big on the villains usually. So this has been a surprise for me.
Yeah, it's just Harley's story, which I figured I never really been a big fan of her solo work, because she's, like I said, with the team or in the Batman or Joker. It fits her better. Or Poison Ivy, the Gotham Sirens. She's just, I don't know, her standalone stuff is just a little weird for me. But just off.
Have you actually been reading these?
I read the first one. I haven't read this last one.
Okay. Well, we start off with, okay, this is this one, okay. I've not reread it since last week, so, but they're in the hospital with Red Tool. He's in the operating room, and they're going to have to give him a new arm. And he's sitting there talking about, wait, where's my severed arm? Didn't you get the cooler? And they said it was damaged way too badly. There's nothing we could do about that. But we can we have a donor that we can get an arm from. now,
a helping hand?
Yeah, no, just wait on this one. So he tells them, you can do this and it works. He says, well, most of the time. Sometimes this one looks like a good match, or sometimes this one looks like a good match, though some of the others were just bad fits. And which he thinks, well, wait a minute, bad fit, what are you going to do? I need my arm. So they tell him, well, we got to lift your mask off so we can put you under to put your arm a new arm on. And he says, but my secret identity will be exposed to everybody. And he says, look, I don't even know who you are anyway, so it doesn't matter if I see what your face looks like, because I don't know who that would be either. The doctor does. So they lift his mask, put him under, and then we move on back to some alien world on the planet Zelbon in a galaxy far, very far away. You have two parents who look a lot like the alien that got ground up and put into the hot dogs. They're sitting there wondering, where did our son go? He disappeared again. He steals the car, but he never leaves for this long. So he says, don't worry, we'll find him. I'm sure he's safe and sound. I'll bet there's somewhere out there, or he's already out there somewhere making new friends. I guess he has an infectious personality, they said. So then you get back into the loft where Poison Ivy and Harley and Harley's gang of freaks are talking about how... what they did with all the zombies, taking them all out and stuff. You get the one guy calling the hospital to find out what's going on with the surgery and the operation. Then you catch the TV screen. It's telling about everything that's going on. Then, since most of the zombies are dead, you get a shower scene with Harley and Poison Ivy talking back and forth. Then she finally realizes, like, we're stuck here because we're inside the quarantine zone. We can't do anything. And, Harley's like, don't worry about everything. We're going to be okay. We've got plenty of stuff. We're okay. We got all the supplies. And then she finds out, oh, wait a minute. How much food do we actually have? So they have to go figure out how much food they have. They find out they're way low on food. They're going to run out of food before the quarantine's lifted.
Oh.
Then we get back to the hospital with Red Tool, and he's got a new arm. He said, it doesn't look horrible. It seems to be working. He moves his fingers. He says, no. Then he says, the doctor says, what are you doing? He says, I don't want this thing attached to me. Of all the hands you could have given me, you guys gave me Chronix. Or wait, no, that I jumped the page. Sorry. So it looks good. The doctor's telling him, yeah, we had you're fine. How do you like it? You expected to be able to... and he says, my fingers aren't working. He says, what, do you expect to be able to play the piano right away? He says, just... And then so... It says he finds out that the arm belonged to Victor the Chronic Temple. He was he was killed running away from the police this morning in Prospect Park. He was a disturbed individual who was being hunted for a very long time around these parts. But it said it fits, everything's going good. So Red Tool says, wait a minute, the Chronic? And then he remembers who this guy is. He was the ones doctors say he couldn't help himself. And he said, yeah, that's him. The man had an exhibitionistic tendencies. It's a serious mental disorder, but with antidepressants he was taking had no effect on it. So this guy was an exhibitionist who liked to help himself in public. And so this is, wait a minute, this is the hand of this guy? So they find out, wait a minute, what are you doing? And the doctor says, don't worry. We replaced your left hand. We replaced your right hand. This guy was a lefty. So don't worry about that. So then we get back to the loft and you find Harley saying, okay, we need to get food. We got to figure out how to get out of this, break this quarantine. They find out that in the wax museum downstairs, there's actually a series of catacombs underneath, or some tunnels that lead out. They found out when they built the place, or when they were remodeling the place, that this was that these tunnels went to other buildings and things in the area. So they go down, they find this door that's all boarded up, has a pentagram on it, and it's surrounded by angels and demon statues.
A little symbolic.
Yeah. Then you see a scene of in outer space. You see a UFO crashing or coming to Earth. Outside, they see the zombies are still walking around, and all the crew is actually walking through the tunnels, and they come to this series of doors, a room with a bunch of doors in it. Some are boarded up, some are not. They have to work their way out because they're trying, like I said, they've got to get out of here. So as they choose doors, they end up going down they find the hallway into the storage area, and as they do, they find the zombies are in this room. So they got to take off, fight off the zombies and get back through the door, and they have to get back into that other room. They're fighting as the two alien parents are coming looking for their kid. So Harley and the crew is and Poison Ivy are all surrounded by all these bad guys, and the parents says, my baby. And it says, give me a second, I think I might have an idea, because they figured out they were able to test to find his DNA was all over the Coney Island area. So it's showing hundreds of pieces of him everywhere. It seems to these savages ripped him to shreds when they saw the zombies. And they think that the zombies had eaten him. So it says, the father says, wait a minute, I got an idea. The recovery beam will locate every piece of their boy and corral it all back there on the ship. So when he does that, all of a sudden, these little green pieces of alien get ripped out of all the zombies. And they all drop dead, basically. And all these pieces are pulled back up into the spaceship. And the aliens take off. So now you're stuck with the zombie apocalypse is over, but you got bodies everywhere. And since the quarantine's done, they were able to actually go out to the diner and finally get some food. And Harley's out there talking to Red Tool, finds out what's going on. And it's just, that's the end of this story arc, and it's the next one is 108 million ways to die, but I skimmed through a lot of that, but there was a lot of stuff in here that's just little one-liners here and there that are just hilarious.
That's how it should be.
Oh yeah. So that was Harley number three. Next up, we actually have Justice League number four.
Yes, I'll get this one. I don't know. The Justice League title prize is my least favorite right now, just because of the way it's just dragging along.
Yeah. Well, I got a couple discoveries during this one that I didn't realize before, so it might help.
Mine was more so for the end there. As we're going through, as you can let me know what yours were.
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning, we have Simon and Jessica trying to fight off everything up in outer space with these ships. And they're saying how the Flash is probably ready down there. But if Flash is, he's ready and he's got something planned, he probably does. So let him take care of that. Now we're back on the barn with Cyborg and Batman. It's this tornado full of these little bat-like creature bug-looking.
It's the whatever the alien things that have been attacking the attacked Gotham.
Right, they're in tornado formation now, and Cyborg's right in the middle of it, and he cannot get a lock or anything on none of these things. And Batman asks Victor, "Is he okay?" Cyborg says, "No, we're screwed."
Well, that's because he finally actually figured out there's been this nagging signal, remember, in the back of his head that he couldn't figure out what it was. He finds out it's actually the way these things, it's the language for these things. And it's actually, now that he's figured out what it is, that's what's actually drawing them to the farm where they're at, is because the signal there. And that's why now that he's able to decipher the signal, he knows what their
what the plan is for them. Coming.
And he knows what's coming. And he said, oh, we're so screwed because of this.
And these giant beings now, they're saying the purge has begun now. The world and has not been taken yet. Time for us to speak our words and be empowered. Breaking our worlds. These guys just look like gods or some type of superior being.
Well, it seems like now, on this one, this is the one where I noticed it. Mm-hmm. The purge is actually those bugs that are attacking the world. These guys are opposite of that. They're two different forces that the purge usually stops them from what they're trying to do. So it looks like the defenders of the earth are going to keep the purge back so they can actually do what they want to do.
But so as it goes back, and we're still reading over, we see Aquaman in Atlantis, and the city's being destroyed right now still. So everything in the world right now is just going kaput. And okay. Now we're back on the barn once again, and you have Cyborg, and now Lois gets in here, and she says, hey, Clark is still taking care of the quakes, right? And Superman is in the world, and he looks like he's getting very close to the center of it. Now, he's punching this, and he's not really doing anything, but he says he cannot fail. That'll be the end of Lois and John and everything that he has worked for over the years, everything he stands for. He can't let it end like that. He can't let them fall. And then Lois is telling Bruce, or Batman at the time, I don't know if she even knows he's Bruce, you trusted your world, Superman, right? And Batman says, yes. Well, you can trust this one, too. He has never let anybody down. As long as I've known him, he's the most trustworthy person I know. And he'll find a way to save us. And now you see Flash running into the wasteland of wherever this forest, wherever these beings are. And he's looking at these guys like, oh, crap, this is what we're dealing with. So he's running, too. But then there's a swarm of those same aliens attack Flash and trip him up. And as in the last issue, Diana seemed like she got swallowed by one of these things. And they're asking her, who are you? She says, I'm an Amazon. Who are you? I don't know. What do you mean? We cannot, what does it say? If you do not know yourself, how can we know? She said, they asked her, what are you here for? She said, answers. And she's trying to figure out the truth of what happened to her. Who is she right now? Because after we've seen the last, or the beginning of Wonder Woman Rebirth, her memories are all discombobulated to the point she doesn't even really remember because of everything that happened with New 52 and the Flashpoint and Rebirth. And they tell her she needs to prepare, and she asks, prepare for what? Now we go back to Superman in the vicinity of, and he's moving. What is this he's exactly moving, Ken?
It's whatever the devices are that are causing the earthquakes. Remember, they had three or four of them in this core of the earth that have been there for thousands and thousands of years. They're actually causing the earthquakes. Okay. Superman was sent in there, remember, to try to stop them, because he's the only one that could survive that area.
Right. And he's now moving it, so that's a good sign.
Mm-hmm.
He can see something happening, and it's getting closer as it increases with the pressure. The crust implode, it said, where was that? He's got to get out of there, he's got to get back to John, because I don't know if he thinks this is going to explode or what's going to happen. But now we go back to all the four giants, and they're powering up right now. And one of them is still inside one of them. And turns out Flash is also in there with her, or at least it looks like it, but he's actually on the outside. But for some reason, he's able to communicate, and it might be because these things are swarming on him, or I don't really know why. But Flash is asking Victor for a boom tube, and they cannot get any signal back on the farm. Something is going on. The network lost his connection. He can hear Barry screaming, but he can't do anything. And as he's looking at Lois, John, and Batman, he faints and passes out for some reasons we do not know yet. Then we go back into space with the Green Lanterns right now. And they see something that no one wanted to. There is a planet full, at least it looks like a planet full or asteroid full of cyborgs.
Yeah, I think that's that's the planet they went to, the origin of where all these things that are attacking the Earth came from.
And they literally have the same exact design as Cyborg. They even have the C on his chest.
Mm-hmm.
And the next issue is to Victor goes to spoils.
So
I did not see that coming. I don't know what the heck's going on with that. I'm interested to figure that out. The story's getting better from just that little cutoff right there. I don't know what those things are. But they look just like Cyborg, and somehow his technology has spread it throughout the universe. We'll find out.
Well, this looks like it... I'm thinking possibly those technological things that are attacking the Earth, they may be actually may be trying to turn the world into basically what Cyborg is.
Dude, I wonder if they think that also because he's a perfect being or what.
I don't know. We'll find out here on the next issue, probably, or hopefully.
Okay.
But the next one we have on the list is Nightwing number 4. Now, this is this actually is the one that we mentioned earlier about Nightwing and Damian and Dick talking at the end of the issue. This is the that issue. This is the end of this story arc. Because from here, remember, we're going into Night of the Night of the Monster Men or whatever it's called. So, this starts in the Raptor's Air, which is Raptor's hideout outside of Istanbul, Turkey. And remember, they have the book from the they have the coin to decipher the book from the Court of Owls or Parliament of Owls. And they have this old lady come and basically tell them how the coin works. Next scene, you see Raptor and Nightwing back in the Parliament of Owls area, learning that they have the Parliament's Grove. This is where we gather to celebrate the birth of their new nation, because the Parliament's finally going to make their own country. And then they find there's hundreds of people in these cages below that area, and they're all to be sacrificed for this new country. Well, Nightwing can't stand for that. Forget that. So, when they're left alone, Nightwing and Raptor start emptying the cages to let the people out. The whole time, someone comes to Orator, which is the guy that is, I guess, in charge of the Parliament at the moment, and he tells them that they have something that he should know. They were looking for a place to broker a merger, and then they saw that they went down to and they saw the new Talons, which are Nightwing and Raptor, letting the people out. Said, "Hey, all of our sacrifices are leaving." So so the orator asks them, "Have you told anybody else?" They say, "No." So he's good because he's now been promoted to a god, and he transforms into this giant bird-looking monster thing. So they're going, and then the next thing they show, Nightwing and Raptor leading the people through the labyrinth to get out as they're attacked by this giant bird thing. And they fight back and forth, they get the people to leave. They were able to fight off the bird thing for a while. It's almost like their version of the Labyrinth Minotaur. So they make it to the center of the labyrinth because they know that the book with all the records of the Parliament is in the center of the labyrinth. So they led the people, showed the people how to get to the door. They went and got the box that has all the information in it. Raptor's almost dead from this fight because he's been actually losing blood and Nightwing didn't know.
Yeah, and he didn't even say anything. I don't think he knew, or if he did know, he wasn't going to say anything about it. He's going to push on.
Mm-hmm. Well, Nightwing remembers in the glove in Raptor's talon, they actually keeps a vial of his blood there to help run the Talon, because the Talon, remember, gives him whatever weapon he needs. So he gives Talon Raptor a transfusion as the monster finds them, and they go running for the door. Or they actually get to the door to the... And Raptor tells Nightwing, "Go, I've got this." And Nightwing's saying, "Well, no, we're partners. We can't do that." And hands him the box and shoves him out the door, which he's basically fallen off of a cliff. So as he's falling off the cliff, he's rescued by Tiger. You remember Tiger from Spiral? Well, Tiger actually, Nightwing called him in to take these refugees out of here, and now he's rescued Nightwing. So Nightwing has everything he needed to actually stop the Parliament finally. And they give all that information to the proper authorities. Then we get the scene we talked about earlier with Damian and Dick in the cave, because Dick's back in Gotham, and they're talking back and forth like brothers, and then Batman sends away Damian so he and Nightwing can talk.
And this is where I was like, yeah, Batman, you're not getting with Dick on this one. Dick's standing up for himself.
Exactly. So Batman doesn't agree. He's been talking to Batgirl, so he knows what Dick's been doing with Raptor, and doesn't agree with anything he said, but Dick tells him basically straight up, "Hey, Bruce, I don't do things the way you do them, but trust me. You've already shown trust the thing. The problem is, though, you don't trust anyone, including me." Now, and Dick tells him straight up, "I tried to figure out why it was so hard for you, but I think I figured it out, the whole trust thing." you can't believe anyone can walk the line between light and dark, because you know that if you ever stepped over that line, even for a second, you'd never come back. And he says, I'm not you, Bruce. And then you get the final scene, the last page is actually Raptor now in the court of Cobra. And we find out that Raptor has also been feeding the same information that he gave to Nightwing. He gave a copy to Cobra. And he actually set it up so that every time a name has popped out from this book, since they have the coin to decipher it, every time law enforcement gets a name off of that book, Cobra is going to get that name also. And they pay him very, very well. And then they say, what about Nightwing? What happens if he figures out that Raptor was working with Cobra? Then Raptor tells him straight up, don't worry about that. I've got that kid wrapped around my finger. So it looks like he's a double agent.
Yep, so he was tricking Dick the whole time.
Mm-hmm. And then the next Nightwing is actually Night of the Monster Men, the crossover from that for number 5. And then back into October on the 19th, we get Rise of the Raptor Part 1. So
that was Nightwing. Wondering, since me and you were talking about Superman, Batman earlier this week, you were saying Batman was your favorite book. I'm saying Superman was mine.
For now, yeah.
Could you get Supergirl and I do Superman?
Yeah, no problem.
Okay.
It's coming up here in just a second. There we go. Supergirl was an interesting one because we got Supergirl number 1. And it shows a little bit of just... Supergirl was the daughter of a doomed society. Just a little bit intro of how she left Argo City, came here to Earth, and now she's Supergirl. Then you get a scene of Eliza Danvers teaching her how to drive a car. Kara just can't understand it. She can't fit in because on Krypton, they don't use cars. Cars fly themselves. So she doesn't understand why she even has to learn how to ride. And this whole book is basically a back and forth between what her life was before and what it is now. It goes back to back on Krypton, playing sports and things when she was young on Krypton, then shows here on Earth playing dodgeball. It goes back to her giving a presentation on Krypton and how she was being accepted into the Science Council just about. She was brilliant on Krypton. Here on Earth, she could barely understand how to work a projector on a classroom. So back and forth, then she hears people talking about she's in the lunchroom. And they're, everybody's kind of whispering, and she can hear everybody. How did she get into this science? Because remember, she's in a science and technology school. How did she get in here? She's no different. She's not any smarter. She must be a legacy. She may have got in here because her parents were in here. And things like that. No one can understand that she could barely work a projector. She doesn't seem to fit in. She's not smart enough for this school. Problem is, she's actually too smart for it.
Right. She's a foreigner, though. That's the main problem.
Exactly. She doesn't understand the way this works. But there is a guy who is another new guy for the school and said, hey, there's something about this girl. She's kind of cool. And the one buddy said, your parents brought you across the country, and the first thing you do is look for the other weirdos in the class instead of trying to fit in. It's like, hey, she seems smart and intelligent. Something's different here. And then he says, intelligence is my brand. This will not stand having someone really smart Elsa, because Cat Grant's Young Innovators Contest is tomorrow, and I don't intend to lose it. He doesn't want someone else popping up out of nowhere to take it from him. But as she's doing that, she hears Supergirl hears some problems on a train. So she takes off from school, and everybody's wondering, why in the world did you do that? And she basically, there's a group of people hijacked a train, and they actually have a data device that's going to steal the data off of all of their devices of everybody that's in the train. And, of course, Supergirl doesn't allow this to happen. She takes them down and finds Cat Grant is on the train. And Cat is not happy about being rescued. According to her, she already had it all in hand. Everything was being taken care of. Her phone was getting ready to reverse hack their device, find out where they came from and stuff. And but now that Supergirl's beat them all up, she can't interrogate any of them. She basically ruined what Cat was trying to do. And then she gets a phone call from Director Chase back at the DEO. Next scene, we get Supergirl and her father talking about, or they're on some kind of a field trip, and Kara's taking pictures of these ancient dinos or something that everybody else is already ready to go back to home. And he tells her that it's like, these animals were here ages ago. They're not going anywhere. We can come back and get this. And she said, it's pretty strange that I wanted to take all these pictures. Everybody else thought so. But he tells her, that's because no one else would have ever seen them the way you do. He would never say that's strange. That's hope. That's what the crest on our chest stands for. So we're bringing some of the movie ideas into this, too.
Mm-hmm.
That the S on the chest actually stands for hope. And that's why he's so proud of her. And then the next scene, you get Kara getting dressed down by Director Chase for working for doing that, saving the train. It says, you cannot go out and do things on your own. You're working with the DEO now. It has to be a sanctioned mission. And you've not been trained to do all this stuff. She actually brings up the point that, well, my Superman doesn't have anybody watching his back or doing these things, but Chase tells him straight up, Superman didn't show up 3 weeks ago and all of a sudden has powers. He learned how to use his powers by growing up. The best way for you to understand the way the world works and how to help people is to use Kara Danvers. Learn how to be a high school girl. Throw everything into this so that you can figure out how it works. Then we get to the Danvers with her in a mall, trying out different cuisines. They're trying to talk to her in Kryptonian, which is funny because some of the translations, they're not getting quite right. And it's almost like they're trying too hard at this point. Then you get another flashback to Krypton of, and it's Kara's mother telling her where she's going to be going and what the planet's going to be like and stuff. Then you get back to the Danvers house, and they did something special for her. They redecorated the inside of the house by what the remember the Sunstone that caused the Sunstone. They got information off of it from Kryptonian records of what Krypton looked like
and rooms looked like.
So they redirected their house or redesigned the house to look like Krypton a little more. And she looks at it and says, "Wait a minute, this was Krypton from 200 years ago. It's not now." And she just takes off. Right? I can't handle this. I gotta go. And so she flies to the fortress. Then you get a scene of Superman showing her how to open the fortress.
Which was pretty fun.
A while ago. Yeah. So she goes to the fortress and realizes that this is the only place that I could feel at home. This is the only part of Krypton that's still here. Argo City's gone. Krypton's gone. And then she hears a voice talking about how I told you I would meet you here on Earth, Kara. I promised I would follow. Do you think our city's dead? Our people are extinct? Argo City lives. I can take you there. Then you turn around and see the cyborg Superman standing there. Just take my hand. Let your father show you the way. So in this one, Zor-El is the cyborg Superman still.
And I like the way the design is, but I did not think that was going to happen.
Exactly.
I know we heard of it happening for a couple months now, but wow.
This one
that makes it a little bit closer to House of L.
Yeah. This one was interesting. It was it was different that it's basically, it seems like everything they covered in this is what they're going to, seems like they will be covering in the new miniseries in December.
Yeah.
So
they're giving us a little inside look on that for right now, see what direction they're going in.
Quite possibly. Well, we have one more book left for this week. We have Superman number 6, and you wanted to do that one.
Yeah, I really like this. I did not think I was going to be this big of a Superman fan going into the rebirth, but this proves to you this is the old classic one and not the new 52 one. This is what made Superman. Well, they were on the moon base in the last issue, and Superman got out with the rest of the souls that were in Eradicator, so now he's running a very low percentage right now. And Superman said, "We've had enough." He is now has the spirits of Krypton in Superman, not the Eradicator. And they're going back and forth. And John's looking at all this saying, "Wow, Mommy, Dad's gotten really strong." And then she's like, "Something's different about your father." And Superman's telling him, "Krypton, the Eradicator, you're going to go down because we're all the souls that you've had trapped in you." And the Eradicator's power level is now at 10%. And he says, "The life force that you've escaped with is the flesh of our flesh, and his spark, or it may spark his fuels, and our holy mandate with what you will fight for the light." And then now they're going at it back and forth, and they're destroying the moon in the process. So back on Earth, they're seeing this as well, and since there's a monitor inside the moon base, John's like, "Holy crap, Mom, we're on TV." And the moon's getting messed up pretty bad. They come out one side of the moon, and there's a lot of flames going on now. But also, Superman said, we've got all those other souls out of here, but there's one more in there that's giving you the power of that 10%. So he reaches his hand, punches it inside of Eradicator's chest, and there's teeth coming out of the S on his chest, and he says, now, I almost got you there, boys. Just follow my voice and bite. It's Krypto. So Superman rips Krypto out of the Eradicator. The Eradicator only had 10% left. So now that Super Dog is out of there, something's going to happen. So as Superman punches him, Super Dog shoots him with his laser vision, and he drops back into Earth and causes this little nuclear explosion, looks like a mushroom cloud, into the moon base. And the government's looking down there. NASA's looking down there like, what the heck is going on Earth, on the moon right now? The Eradicator stands up and says, the boy will destroy your ancestors, your legacy. They cannot survive the son of Superman. And then Kal-El just says, they are free to speak for themselves. And turns out all the souls somehow made a formation of the House of El symbol, the S, lighted up like a fireworks. And he says, thank you. And then Eradicator's still talking, saying, it's so cold, I see how you feel, hiding in the darkness, always alone. Superman says, I'm never alone. Gives Krypto some orders and his cape back and says, Krypto, sit. And that's all he had to do for Eradicator. So Eradicator has now been beaten. Now Superman can get his family back to Earth where they belong. He fixes the moon base, puts the flag of American flag back into the ground. And I don't know why I'm forgetting the guy's name. What's the... thank you. Bibbo's looking on the TV screen in his bar saying, that's Superman right there. And the picture is basically of him with the Earth behind him and the American flag right behind him as well on the moon. And this reminds me exactly this pose from the old 1950 cartoons.
Yeah, it's very similar to the classic Superman stance.
Oh, man, it's so similar. He's got the shattering is right on here. His facial expression, the eyes, everything is perfect. And they're even looking at Superman now saying, whoa, he's really back, because they thought he was dead.
All the people are watching it on the big screen TVs.
And Superman is definitely back now. And he then there's Lois, Superboy, and Krypto. And he tells Krypto, let's get John and Lois back home, boy. And they speed off into the distance. And now they're back on Earth, and Superman is getting awarded with the key to the city. And this is a little funny dialogue right here, is when Lois just got a bathtub, and John's joking. We're saying, do you get behind your bat ears? And do you mean bat mom? Since she was dressed up in a bat suit, so now she's just tickling him and say, I'll show you bats right here. And they're watching their husband and father on a television accepting this reward. And then they news interviews Bibbo, and there was that rock, that moon rock that he had where all this came from, and he said, Superman is always welcome at my joint anytime. So Bibbo is always going to be Superman's biggest fan in this case. And it's now nighttime. Jonathan's looking at the moon thinking about, man, they were really up there. And Superman walks in, or Clark Kent walks in, and says, hey, kiddo, I got something for you. He hands him this hat and some glasses. Big old glasses, by the way. And he says, what are these for? And he's questioning him, and he says, well, the thing about being Superman, I tried to keep my secrets from you, didn't want you to see your heritage, but turns out that's who you are. I have to let you be who you are, and that is a son of Superman. And he says, well, prepare yourself, because we're going to go into the city next. Is it tomorrow, or is it a couple days? You know, they're going to the city tomorrow, and they're going to start school for him. He says, so why do I need these glasses? Because the best thing about taking off these glasses, and this, I love this part. The best part about taking off the glasses, the best part about putting on the glasses is getting to take them off. Now, quickly and quietly follow me. So, Superman and Superboy go to Batman's base.
They're up on the watchtower now.
Right. And the only ones in there are Batman and Wonder Woman. And Superman's in there, and they're thinking, who the heck is this coming into the territory? He says, I'm here to help. Batman tells him I can afford the repairs for the moon base. And he says, I have somebody here I would like you to meet. And then Wonder Woman says, I would like you to meet Superboy. And all he says is, hi. So this is the trendy with Superboy. And I thought this was great. And I love this book because this just gave me nostalgia. So show that the legacy will now live on in Superman's DNA with him and Lois. This is a half breed. Mm-hmm. The only Superboy we had before was the Lex and Superboy counterpart. That was when Lex and Clark's DNA mixed. And that was a great Superboy. But having someone from Lois and Clark, their actual son, just gave me nostalgia. So now we can actually have a good crossover between Superman's son and Batman's son, and they will continue on their legacy. So that was Superman issue number 6.
So that actually finishes up our comic reviews for the week, I believe.
Yes, it does.
So we got to make one trip before we close this out for the night. And that was the Shazbots. They, as always, this week they provide the comic shop for us. Check them out on iTunes and Facebook. Let them know DC Superpower sent you. So this week's comics, we have 10 comics coming out for September 21st for the Rebirth titles. And you want to start, or do you have any of these pulled up yet?
Yes, I do.
Okay, why don't you start with number one, and we'll just go, you go the odds, I'll take the evens.
Okay. Who Framed Aquaman? And this is Aquaman number 7. The investigation into the Atlantean attack on America forces kicks off a mysterious as the criminal collective Nemo unleashes a new and terrible weapon that threatens the existence of all Atlantis itself. Art is done by Wayne Forkshu, Scott Eaton, and written by Dan Abbott.
Okay.
So it looks like we'll get more into it. I'm really curious what's going to happen with Nemo now since Black Manta is the leader now.
Yeah. Well, Nemo's dead now, isn't he? It looked like he was.
Yeah, he's gone.
So,
but their base is still set up, and they need a leader. And what do you do, like back in the barbarian times? If we whoever kills the king becomes the new king, and we have to follow the orders.
Well, the next one up is actually Batman number 7, and this is actually the start of the first crossover since Rebirth. This is
and
go ahead.
Yeah, I'll say the description for that is going to be very similar also with Nightwing later on when we get down here. So there, you have to pick up these books all together to get the whole story, which I like. A great crossover should be.
Yeah, a true crossover. Well, this is Night of the Monster Men Part 1. Now, this is Part 1 of the 6-part crossover. It says, the first crossover of the Rebirth era is here. As a huge storm approaches, Batman, Batwoman, and Nightwing try to prepare Gotham City for the worst. But nothing can prepare them for the enormous tall monsters rampaging through the streets. Batman will need all of his allies to unite in order to stop these mad science monsters from tearing the city apart. This was art by Riley Rosmo and written by Tom King and Steve Orlando. So it looks like we got a new writer on this, or a new artist on this one.
Hmm. Next on our list is Cyborg issue number 1, after the Rebirth title. The Imitation of Life, Part 1. Cyborg is thrown into conflict with every robotic threat in the DC universe as a brand new era begins for Victor Stone, courtesy of writer John Semper Jr., Spider-Man animated series creator, and artist Will Cohart of Angels and Faith creator. And that's all we get for description there. So we'll finally get to see all those metal people that we were seeing, all the cybernetics.
Exactly.
And we might get help from Steel, possibly, or someone might try to take over their mental state. I have no idea, but we will find out.
Did you read Superwoman yet for this week?
No, I did not.
Oh, you got to read Superwoman, then we can talk.
Okay. I'm guessing Steel has something to do with that.
Just a little bit.
Okay.
So, and that'll actually be reviewed on next week's show, guys. So the next one we got is Green Arrow number 7, Killing Time. In a tale from happier but no less dangerous times, Green Arrow labors to train a new apprentice who's every bit as deadly as his fiercest villains, a teenage girl. But before Emiko and Ollie can embrace as brother and sister, they have to save Seattle from a foe that can see the future of anyone he chooses. Anyone, that is, except Emiko Queen. Art is done by Stephen Byrne. And written by Benjamin Percy. So it looks like we get to flip back to you may be getting Emiko as Speedy or whatever she's going to be a lot more closer than you thought she would be.
Hopefully. And our next issue is Green Lantern's number 7, The Gun. How can Jessica trust Simon when he doesn't even trust the Green Lantern ring they both wear? The partners finally discuss the gun Simon carries and why. Art is done by Jack Herbert and written by Sam Humphries.
I need to go
not
back.
Not a lot of description in that.
Yeah, not a lot of description, but we're finally going to, now that the Red Lanterns part of it is over, we actually get, or no, are they still in the middle of Rage Planet? No, that ended last issue, didn't it?
Right.
So, okay, now that we're get to see them together, we can actually see where this is going to go. So, see how, get a little bit more of their actual characters and what's going to happen. Hopefully we'll get more of that little, the new Guardian, too.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
He's over in Simon's family, so.
Yeah, having a good old time there.
The next one is Harley Quinn number 4. 108 million ways to die. Even though she hates to leave Coney Island as it, even though she hates to leave Coney Island as it rebuilds after the zombie apocalypse, Harley must set out on a journey that will take her around the world and into the clutches of a bizarre robotic enemy. Too bad her mecha Harley suit didn't fit in the overhead bin. Art is done by Joseph Michael Linzer, and it was written by Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor.
Next one here we have Justice League number 5, The Extinction Machine Part 5. In this concluding chapter, the race to the corners of the Earth is on Aquaman as he holds the key to saving our planet from destruction. If he can make it there in time before the last Doomsday's machine powers up, can Superman also survive his trip to the Earth's core? Is this the final battle between the Justice League and the Kindred, or is it something starting? Or is it something of starting much worse? Art is done by Sandu Flora, Tony S. Daniel, and written by Brian Hitch.
Well, hopefully we get once this story starts coming to an end, we actually get more of them working together after this. Especially now hopefully. That they through this story they brought Superman into the league.
Right.
So the next one we have is Nightwing number 5. It says, and this is part 2 of Night of the Monster Men. Now remember, this comes out the same week as part 1, so make sure you read the Batman first. It's Night of the Monster Men part 2. The Monster Men are stomping their way through Gotham City. How can the Bat Team face the monsters and the storm of the century? And when Nightwing goes behind the scenes to discover where the monsters came from, what lurks in the shadows may be worse than the monsters themselves. The art is by Roge Antonio, and it's written by Tim Seeley and Steve Orlando. It looks like Steve Orlando was on Batman too, so he may be the one guiding the whole story where you still have the Batman writers in there.
Probably. She's not bad.
So that was Nightwing number 5.
Okay, next one on here we have Superman issue number 7. Son of Superman part 7. In the epilogue issue, Superman considers his toll on the battle with Eradicator and Doomsday have taken on his family, and they need to get a normal life. But can the Man of Steel ever take a day off? Art done by George Zimandes, and written by Patrick Gleason and Peter J. Tomasi.
If this is anything like the epilogue one they had in Batman, this should be good.
Yeah.
So, and it's always cool to see Superman trying to be just a normal guy.
Normal guy. That brings back the whole Clark Kent aspect.
So, and we have one title left for this week. We actually have Trinity number 1, Better Together Part 1. Together again for the first time, Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman, the core of the world's greatest heroes. But with the new Man of Steel, the bonds these three share will be tested and redefined by superstar writer Francis Manapul. In this premiere issue, see the trio travel from Metropolis to Gotham City and beyond to learn what forces launched their heroic careers. But how will this journey of discovery lead them to a new threat? And Francis Manapul does the art and the writing on this one, and the covers and everything. This is his book all the way through.
Okay. Now, this isn't a Rebirth title, right?
Yes, this is.
Oh, this is? Okay.
This is one of the Rebirth titles. Books. There's one in here that I didn't cover was there's a Raven number 1 coming out next week. It's actually going to be a prequel to the Teen Titans coming up. So
something like that they were doing with the Suicide Squad when they had their little spin-offs.
Yeah. So, but that takes care of all the books for this week. This has actually been a long week, but it's Batman Day. We got to celebrate some. So right. We got to talk some good Batman. We got to cover all of our books. Remember, we're going to do some changes to the way we do the review so it doesn't take as long for us. But like I said, if you really, really like the reviews, we may do a second show or something. But we need you to let us know, Super Friends. Get a hold of us at... So get a hold of us at DCSuperpowersPodcast@gmail.com. You can get a hold of us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Vernon, how can they get a hold of us?
You can find us on Instagram, DC Superpowers Podcast. Also on Facebook, DC Superpowers Podcast. And on Twitter is Superpowers DC. You can find me on my personal Instagram, Hollin' At Wolf. On my Facebook, Vernon McWayne Moore. And on Twitter, I am V Yellow.
And then on Instagram and Twitter, I am GW1 Ken. On Facebook, I'm just Ken Rose. But get a hold of us. Let us know how you want this done. Do we need to just keep doing all the reviews? Should we do it as a separate show? Should we just cut back so we're doing just the initial story arcs and the number ones? Let us know how this what you guys want to hear, because we're going to have to start adding TV stuff in again, too, because this summer's just about over.
Right, Gotham's already coming on.
Also, remember, we are still running our iTunes contest. Head over to iTunes, leave us a rating and or a review. Let us know what you think of the show. As soon as we get 10 ratings or reviews, we're giving away free comics. We have the Rebirth Special number 1 from back in June. We have the first, second, and third printings, because they had three separate looks and feels to the book. They are going to whoever is randomly chosen out of the first 10 reviews. We have 2 reviews up there now, so we got plenty of room to get in there. And then every 10 reviews after that, we are collecting comics that we're going to randomly send out. They may be trades, they may be a couple issues of something. We don't know yet. We got to see what happens when we get there. So, Vernon, do you have anything else for this week?
No. Everybody, celebrate Batman Day. Celebrate this weekend. Play some video games, read some comic books, watch some old cartoons, some movies. Just get out there and be a fan of Batman.
Exactly. Well, you can always find us. Remember, we are members of the Tangent Bound Network and the Weeby Geeks Network, and we are proud members of the Geek Watch One family of podcasts. And with that, I think I need to head out to the comic shop and check out what they got for Batman Day.
Sounds sweet.
So, super friends, we'll see you next week.
You're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast.